Senate will come to order. We have our nurse for the day that came over to the bright side, Jennifer Burns. Welcome. Good to see you. Thanks for being here. Members of the Senate, we've had a major hiccup down on the other end of the building about a bill. Oh, we haven't read them in. Okay, well, let's do the messages from the, H-O-U-S-C, what's that spell? Oh, House. Messages from the House.
From the House of Representatives, February 23, 2017, message number 6. Mr. President, the House rescinded the last action taken on House Bill 192, Court Automation Fee 2, ayes 52, noes 8. Message number 384, concurrence failed. Mr. President, the House failed to concur on Senate amendments to House Bill number 192, Court Automation Fee 2, ayes 2, noes 58. Message number 385, conferees appointed, Joint Conference Committee 1. Mr. President, the Speaker appointed House conferees to meet with a like committee from the Senate on amendments to House Bill 192. House conferees are Representative Nicholas, Chairman, Representative Connolly, Representative Edwards. Message number 383, concurrence requested. Mr. President, the Senate File 105, Uniform Power of Attorney Act, passed on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated, ayes 60. House respectfully asks Senate to concur by adopting listed amendments. Signed, Wendy Harding, House Chief Clerk.
Now can I say what I wanted to say, Madam Chief Clerk? There was a major issue down there, and it's a pretty controversial thing, and I've been struggling with what to do with this conference committee, and I haven't talked to the majority floor leader because he's not listening. Nothing, Senator Perkins. Anyway, I've come up with a conference committee. The floor could always override me, but I wouldn't have suggested for House Bill 192, and the members of the committee will be Senator Anselmi Dalton, Senator Ellis, and Senator Nethercott. But where I struggled was to who to make the chairman. Senator Ellis, your chair. Good luck. Anything else? How about standing committee reports? Oh, Senator Kinski.
As you named that conference committee team, all I could hear was Mr. T saying, "I pity the fool, I pity him, we got him surrounded now."
Who's Mr. T?
Who's Mr. T?
I don't know what you just said, Senator Kinski.
You're lucky. He doesn't know Mr. T?
Any other important conference committees I've got to appoint?
We've got to get everybody caught up on their cultural references.
I'm still waiting for Senator Perkins on that one, so we'll wait. Senator Perkins, I believe we're ready for that bill. Oh no, we're not. I want to get to that general file, Senator Perkins. Senator Scott, are you ready for your message number 379, concurrence requested on Senate File 63?
Yes, Mr. President.
Will the reading clerk please read it in?
Message number 379, referencing Senate File 63, Department of Family Services statutory amendments.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate do concur with House amendments to Senate File 63, and I ask you to vote aye. Mr. President, what the House did was they made a technical correction On page 12 of the bill, that's just a little minor cleanup. And then they on page 11, they change the word greater to the word lesser. There's two choices there. The bill, as I remember it, that came to the department, they were getting licensed not to go to the greater one as part of the budget cutting. The way the bill did it, as we sent over, is fine. The way the House did it is fine, so there's no problems there. So the bill is, Mr. President, the bill is in good shape. It's the statutory amendments to the Department of Family Services, not a controversial bill, and I would urge the Senate to adopt the amendments.
Discussion? The motion is to concur to message number 379 to Senate file 63. You've been asked to vote aye. If you vote aye, you do concur. Chief Clerk will please call the roll.
Agar?
Aye.
Aye. Anderson?
Aye.
Anselmi Dalton?
Aye.
Aye. Baldwin?
Aye.
Aye. Barnard?
Aye.
Aye. Boner?
Aye.
Aye. Bouchard?
Aye.
Aye. Burns? Burns?
Aye.
Aye. Case?
Aye.
Aye. Christensen?
Aye.
Aye. Coe?
Aye.
Aye. Dockstetter?
Aye.
Aye. Driscoll?
Excused.
Excused. Ellis?
Aye.
Aye. Emmerich?
Aye.
Aye. Hastert?
Aye.
Aye. Hicks?
Aye.
Aye. Kinski?
Aye.
Aye. Landon?
Aye.
Aye. Meyer?
No.
No. Moniz?
Aye.
Aye. Nethercott?
Aye.
Pappas?
Aye.
Aye. Perkins?
Aye.
Aye. Peterson?
Aye.
Aye. Rothfuss?
Aye.
Aye. Scott?
Aye.
Aye. Von Fladern?
Aye.
Aye. Wasberger?
Aye.
Aye. President Bebout?
Aye.
Aye. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 28 aye, 1 no, 1 excused.
By your vote, you have voted to concur to House Amendments to Senate File 63, message number 379. Message number 383, Senator Scott, are you ready?
Mr. President, yes, sir, I'm ready.
Please read it in.
Message number 379, referencing Senate File 63, Department of Family Services statutory amendments.
Senator Scott.
Is that the same?
Which message?
You gave me message number 383. Senator Scott, hold on. We were given some wrong information here. Let's get it corrected.
This 383 is Uniform Power of Attorney. I'm ready on that, too.
I did the one 383.
Okay, there you go.
Senator Scott, it is message number 383. It's been read in. The floor is yours.
Okay. Uniform Power of Attorney Act. Mr. President, the Senate will recall.
Could you move it, please?
Yeah. Mr. President, I move the Senate adopt the House amendments to Senate File 105, Uniform Power of Attorney Act. Mr. President, you will remember this is the Uniform Act in this area. It replaces our inadequate current statute, a very well-done Uniform Act. What the House did was not in the uniform provisions, but in the transition provisions, they added a new Section C that says the power of attorneys that are proper on the effective day of the act remain valid and be construed and have to be relied on by outside parties. It says almost the same thing as the existing subsection C, which becomes subsection D. So they really haven't changed very much. They've just said it twice to make sure that the attorneys that are a little slow get the message that the existing powers of attorney continue to remain valid. That's all it does, and so I urge the Senate to vote aye.
The motion is to concur to message number 383 to Senate File 105, and you've been asked to vote aye. If you vote aye, you vote to concur. Chief Clerk, please call the roll.
Agar? Agar?
Aye.
Aye. Anderson?
Aye.
Aye. Anselmi Dalton?
Aye.
Aye. Baldwin?
Aye.
Aye. Barnard?
Aye.
Aye. Boner?
Aye.
Aye. Bouchard?
Aye.
Aye. Burns?
Aye.
Aye. Case?
Aye.
Aye. Christensen?
Aye.
Aye. Coe?
Aye.
Dockstetter?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Ellis?
Aye.
Aye. Emmerich?
Aye.
Aye. Hastert?
Aye.
Aye. Hicks?
Aye.
Aye. Kinski?
Aye.
Aye. Landon? Landon?
Aye.
Aye. Meyer?
Aye.
Aye. Moniz?
Aye.
Aye. Nethercott?
Aye.
Pappas?
Aye.
Aye. Perkins?
Aye.
Aye. Peterson?
Aye.
Aye. Rothfuss?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Aye. Von Fladen?
Aye.
Aye. Wasserberger?
Aye.
Aye. President Bebout?
Aye.
Aye. Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 30 aye.
By your vote, you voted to concur to the House amendments to Senate File 105 Uniform Power of Attorney Act, being message number 383. Senator Scott, you're on a roll. Are you ready for message number 373.
373. Yes, Mr. President.
Senate File 66. Reading clerk, please read that in.
Message number 373, referencing Senate File 66, Title 25, Payment Obligations, Federal Entities.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate do concur with House amendments to Senate File 66, Title 25, Payment Obligations, Federal Entities, and I ask the Senate to vote aye. Mr. President, this was the bill that was put in to make sure that our local hospitals and other entities that have a patient under the involuntary commitment process that should be paid for by a federal entity, in fact, bill that entity instead of just coming to the state or the counties, because we pay better, make them at least bill the feds and see if we can get something. What the House did is a matter of minor substance. They changed the waiting period after the feds have been billed when we give up on them from 4 months, as we sent it to them, to 3 months. Mr. President, feds still get billed. They still have the opportunity to pay. The change is of minor substance, but I don't think it's worth arguing with them about. So I would urge Senate to vote aye and adopt the House amendments.
Discussion? The motion is to concur to message number 373 to Senate File 1, Senate File 66. If you vote aye, you vote to concur. Chief Clerk, please call the roll.
Agar?
Aye.
Aye. Anderson?
Aye.
Aye. Anselmi Dalton?
Aye.
Aye. Baldwin?
Aye.
Aye. Barnard?
Aye.
Aye. Boner?
Aye.
Aye. Bouchard?
Aye.
Aye. Burns?
Aye.
Aye. Case?
Aye.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Aye. Dockstetter?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Aye. Ellis?
Aye.
Aye. Emmerich?
Aye.
Aye. Hastert?
Aye.
Aye. Hicks?
Aye.
Aye. Kinski?
Aye.
Aye. Landon?
Aye.
Aye. Meyer? Aye. Moniz?
Aye.
Aye. Nethercott?
Aye.
Pappas?
Aye.
Aye. Perkins?
Aye.
Aye. Peterson?
Aye.
Aye. Rothfuss?
Aye.
Aye. Scott?
Aye.
Aye. Von Fladen?
Aye.
Aye. Wasserberger?
Aye.
Aye. President Bebout?
Aye.
Aye. Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 30 aye.
By your vote, you have voted to concur to the House amendments to Senate File 66, being message number 373. Senator Scott, are you ready for Senate File 62, telepharmacy amendments?
Yes, sir, Mr. President.
Please read that in.
Message number 350, referencing Senate File 62, telepharmacy amendments.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I move the Senate do adopt the House amendments to Senate File 62, telepharmacy amendments, and I ask the Senate to vote no. Mr. President, on this one, they messed it up. They did two things, one of which it borders on a technical glitch. They focused on the function of the pharmacist in these telepharmacies, where they look at the electronic communication. They look at the label that's going on the prescriptions that are going out and make sure it's proper. And they forgot those other supervision functions, and they amended it so that the pharmacy people can no longer get at the pharmacy itself, which was licensed to do the remote location. And that is a mistake. There's some issues beyond just the labeling on the prescription that have to be dealt with. And this might cause some trouble if you had a telepharmacy that was not being run properly and the Board of Pharmacy had to do something. So that's the main thing they did. The other thing they did was to require that the license had to be resident in the state. That's a policy decision. I think that's fine. I don't think it's worth arguing with, but we ought to fix the technical glitch, Mr. President. So I ask the Senate to vote no on this one.
Further discussion? The motion is to concur to message number 350, Senate File 62, telepharmacy amendments. You've been asked to vote no. If you vote no, you vote to not concur. Chief Clerk, please call the roll.
Agar?
No.
No. Anderson?
No.
No. Anselmi Dalton?
No.
No. Baldwin?
No.
No. Barnard?
No.
No. Boner?
No.
No. Bouchard?
No.
No. Burns?
No.
No. Case? No. Christensen?
No.
No. Coe?
No.
No. Dockstetter?
No.
No. Driscoll?
No.
No. Ellis?
No.
No. Emmerich?
No.
Hastert?
No.
No. Hicks? No. Kinski?
No.
No. Landon?
No.
No. Meyer?
No.
Moniz?
No.
No. Nethercott?
No.
Pappas?
No.
Perkins?
No.
No. Peterson?
No.
No. Rothfuss?
No.
Scott?
No.
Von Fladen?
No.
Wasserberger?
No.
No. President Bebout?
No.
No. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 30 no.
By your vote, you have voted not to concur to message number 350 to Senate File 62. Senator Scott, you ready on Senate File? Wait a minute, we already did 63. You gave this back to me. Did we just do that one? The chief clerk was seeing if I was paying attention. Senator Case, are you ready on message number 376?
Yes, sir, Mr. President.
Will the reading clerk please read in that message?
Message number 376, referencing Senate File 14, inoperative liquor licenses.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move message number 376, the concurrence request to Senate File 14, inoperative liquor licenses. I ask the Senate to vote no. It seems like a de minimis change that our friends made, but if you go to the last page of the bill, the language, remember this was about inoperable liquor licenses, and we had a lot of help from the majority floor leader on this one. And if you look at lines 9, 10, and 11, we had, for purposes of this paragraph, remain operational means operational consecutively for 12 months or for not less than 3 months if determined by the local licensing authority to be a seasonal operation. Mr. President, what our good friends did is they tried to add the words after consecutively in any calendar year. And I think that can be problematic, Mr. Chairman, because you could have, Mr. President, because you could have parts in one calendar year and parts in another calendar year. So I think it's something we just need to visit with them. We'll get this one worked out, but please vote no.
The motion is to concur to message number 376 to Senate File 14, inoperative liquor license, and you've been asked to vote no. If you vote no, you vote to not concur. Chief Clerk, please call the roll.
Agar?
No.
No. Anderson?
No.
No. Anselmi Dalton?
No.
No. Baldwin?
No.
No. Barnard?
No.
No. Boner?
No.
No. Bouchard?
No.
No. Burns?
No.
No. Case? Conflict? Christensen? No. Coe?
No.
Dockstetter?
No.
No. Driscoll? Driscoll conflict. Ellis?
No.
No. Emmerich?
No.
Hastert?
No.
No. Hicks?
No.
No. Kinski? No. Landon?
No.
No. Meyer?
No.
No. Moniz?
No.
No. Nethercott? No. Pappas?
No.
No. Perkins?
No.
No. Peterson?
No.
No. Rothfuss?
No.
No. Scott?
No.
No. Von Fladern?
No.
No. Wasserberger?
No.
No. President Bebout?
No.
No. Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 28 no, 2 conflict.
By your vote, you voted to not concur to message number 376 to Senate file 14. Senator Ellis, chairman of that powerful joint conference committee.
Mr. President, may I have privilege of the floor?
Depends on what you want to. No, you may.
Mr. President, in our gallery, we have a group called the PSO, which stands for Public School Options. This is a group of parents and students who attend public school, but kind of in a different format. A lot of these students are in charter schools and your Wyoming Virtual Academy and other virtual academy programs. So they're here, and every year they have a Capitol Day celebration where they usually do a march, but due to our weather, they've had to curtail some of their activities. But they're here today, so let's give them a warm welcome.
Welcome. The one young gentleman has a tie. He's looking awfully sharp back there. Not that the others aren't, but I recognize that tie. Senator Case, are you ready on message number 377?
Yes, Mr. President, I am.
Reading clerk, please read that message in.
Message number 377, referencing Senate File 16, Special Districts Elections.
Mr. President, I would move message number 377, the concurrence request to Senate File 16, Special Districts Elections, and I'd ask the Senate to vote aye. There were two amendments, one the Standing Committee amendment and one a second reading amendment that were passed on this bill by our friends down the hall. The first one that was the Standing Committee amendment removed the language on page 2 and 3, took out that entire section of 2229.110. They did this at the request of the County Clerks Organization because the County Clerks had realized that this, as this section with the number of days for the election was not workable, the clerks didn't have a fix, and they're going to canvass the clerks at their organizational meeting and bring a fix for next year. So we'll probably see that through the Corporations Committee. The other one is purely grammatical, Mr. President. If you look on page 5, you can see that line 14, it says the board is authorized to, and then each Romanette starts with a 2, or at least Romanettes 2 and 3 started with a 2 as well. So we had double 2s, 2020, or 2020, I'm sorry. And so they actually had to bring in Romanette 3 to fix the 2 in Romanette 3 as well. So that was a totally to fix that I fully support. I would hope you would vote to concur. Thank you.
The motion is to concur to message number 377 to Senate File 16, Special District Elections, and you've been asked to vote aye. If you vote aye, you vote to concur. Chief Clerk, please call the roll.
Agar?
Aye.
Aye. Anderson?
Aye.
Aye. Anselmi Dalton?
Aye.
Aye. Baldwin?
Aye.
Aye. Barnard?
Aye.
Aye. Boner?
Aye.
Aye. Bouchard?
Aye.
Aye. Burns?
Aye.
Case?
Aye.
Aye. Christensen?
Aye.
Aye. Cope?
Aye.
Aye. Dockstetter?
Aye.
Aye. Driscoll?
Aye.
Aye. Ellis?
Aye.
Aye. Emmerich?
No.
Aye. Hastert?
Aye.
Aye. Hicks?
Aye.
Aye. Kinski?
Aye.
Aye. Landon?
Aye.
Aye. Meyer?
Aye.
Moniz?
Aye.
Aye. Nethercott?
Aye.
Aye. Pappas?
Aye.
Aye. Perkins?
Aye.
Aye. Peterson?
Aye.
Aye. Rothfuss?
Aye.
Aye. Scott?
Aye.
Aye. Von Fladern?
Aye.
Aye. Wasserberger?
Aye.
Aye. President Bebout?
Aye.
Aye. Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 30 aye.
By your vote, you voted to concur to message number 377 to Senate File 16, Special Districts Elections. Senator Case, you ready on 356? Please read it in.
Message number 356, referencing Senate File 44, Speech Pathology and Audiology.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move message number 356, the concurrence request to Senate File 44, speech pathology and audiology. I ask the Senate to vote aye. These are kind of grammatical changes, Mr. President. I'm very ashamed to say that two more suches escaped the Corporations Committee on the Senate side. And so that's the part of the Standing Committee. They're getting very good at suches down there. And they're almost rivaling our senior senator from Natrona County. You can also see, Mr. President, they added the word A after is. And on page 13, lines 18, this is about their seal. And they decided that this read better. And I think we should just let them get away with it. But we had said the board shall adopt a seal to be affixed to all licenses issued in accordance with this act and to authenticate its proceedings. I think that's perfectly fine. But they thought they could better us, and they said the board shall utilize an adopted seal to affix to all licenses issued. That is major work, and we perhaps should go to conference, but I think we could let it slide. Turn to page 14. You can see that line 9, the word article was misspelled. And, Mr. Chairman, there's another, or Mr. President, there's another series. You get the right page. It's equally dramatic of a change. Page 4, line 20, we had said providing bilingual translation during screening and assessment activities exclusive of interpretation. I thought that was pretty good, Mr. President, but they thought this was better. Provide bilingual interpretation, bilingual interpretation and translation for screening and assessment activities exclusive of clinical interpretation. Those are major, major changes, and I realize this is a leap, but I'm hoping that the Senate will concur with this one.
Discussion after that explanation. I thought there might be. Senator Perkins.
So does this now require bilingual testing as opposed to where before it wasn't bilingual testing?
Anybody else have any questions? Sir Meyer.
Yeah, I'm just wondering what the other lingual is, because I heard that the state to the south of us in some circumstances have up to 47 different interpreters, so, you know, as far as different languages. So I don't know whether or not it is contemplated that it's, what languages are used.
Anybody else? Senator Case.
Well, Mr. President, I always thought bilingual was over there by in Goshen County somewhere, actually. In regard to the good senator's question about whether this requires bilingual anything, it does not. It is in the there's a definition on page 4, beginning on line 7, of a speech-language pathology aid. And that means an individual who meets minimum qualifications established by the board rule for speech-language pathology aids and who works under the direct supervision of a licensed speech-language pathologist. A speech-language pathology aid may, A, assist with clerical work, and B, is provide bilingual interpretation and translation for screening. So that says that this aid may do that. It doesn't require that. That same language is used on page 6, and it comes under the definition of speech-language pathology assistance. And it kind of means the same thing, that a speech-language pathology assistant may provide bilingual interpretation. Doesn't require it, Mr. President. Thank you.
The motion is to concur to message number 356 to Senate File 44, Speech Pathology and Audiology. You've been asked to vote aye. If you vote aye, you vote to concur. Chief Clerk, please call the roll.
Agar?
Aye.
Aye. Anderson?
Aye.
Aye. Anselmi Dalton?
Aye.
Aye. Baldwin?
Aye.
Aye. Barnard?
Aye.
Aye. Boner?
Aye.
Aye. Bouchard?
Aye.
Aye. Burns?
Aye.
Case?
Aye.
Aye. Christensen?
Aye.
Aye. Coe?
Aye.
Aye. Dockstetter?
Aye.
Aye. Driscoll?
Aye.
Aye. Ellis?
Aye.
Aye. Emmerich?
Aye.
Aye. Hastert?
Aye.
Aye. Hicks?
No.
No. Kinski? Aye. Landon?
Aye.
Aye. Meyer?
No.
No. Moniz?
Aye.
Aye. Nethercott?
Aye.
Pappas?
Aye.
Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Rothfuss?
Aye.
Scott? Aye. Von Slater? Aye. Wasserberger?
Aye.
President Bebau?
Aye.
Aye. Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 28 aye, 2 no.
By your vote, you voted to adopt the concurrence request for message number 356 to Senate File 44, Speech Pathology and Audiology. Senator Scott, I've got you for one more. Senate File 66, message number 373. Are you ready? You gave that back to me? She keeps, we want to hear your arguments again, Senator Scott, but you don't have to do it. Senator Scott, you have privilege of the floor. Get after it. Time out a second here. Standing Committee reports.
February 23, 2017. Mr. President, your committee number 6, to whom is referred House Bill 63 engrossed, Game Animal Licenses Limitations, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Anselmi Dalton, Boner, Emmerich, and Moniz. No, Senator Barnard, Senator Emmerich, Chairman. Mr. President, your committee number 3, to whom was referred House Bill 131 engrossed, Disposition of Lottery Proceeds, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Ellis, Peterson, and Wasserberger. No, Senators Case and Kinski. Senator Peterson, Chair.
Just for members of the Senate, to give you an update on the performance of our Senate, in second reading in the House, they have one Senate file on second reading. We have 7 House bills. Third reading, they have 3. We have 6. Committee of the Whole, they have 7. We have 13. General file, they've got 42. We've got 40. Bottom line is the House Enrolled Act 53, Senate Enrolled Act 35. Good job, Senators. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we're at the order of business consideration of bills on general file.
I'm sorry, did you ask me to move to adjourn? I'm sorry, I missed that.
That motion is in order, but I would prefer you didn't do it.
Okay, in that case, thank you. Just a little levity before we start into this work this afternoon. Should I put off a little longer? Should we get to it? Mr. President, I move that the Senate resolve itself in the committee of the whole for consideration of these House bills on general file.
Heard the motion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Would that dapper senator from Cowley, Senator Peterson.
Committee of the Whole, come to order. Thank you. First House bill for our consideration is House Bill 20. The reading clerk will read in the House bill.
House Bill 20 engrossed, Honor and Remember Flag, sponsored by Representative Barlow, an act relating to the display of flags, was referred to Committee Number 6, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Anselmi Dalton, Barnard, Boner, Emmerich, and Moniz. Senator Emmerich, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Emmerich?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation that House Bill 20 engrossed do pass. And for an explanation of this fine little bill, I would yield to Senator Pappas.
Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We have a fine bill here for your consideration this afternoon. Probably many of us attended last night's dedication ceremony at the Wyoming National Guard for fallen members of the Wyoming Guard since 9/11. It was a very moving and touching ceremony for those who gave the ultimate price. And this bill basically authorizes the display of the honor and remember flag. If you look at the bill, line 12, you'll see that it is a symbol, on page 1, it is a symbol of gratitude and respect for the ultimate sacrifice made by members of the United States military in service to our nation. The honor and remember flag described under section C of this bill. Now this, as you see, the last word on that line, may, and onto the next page, be displayed at any state leased or owned building or office beneath the national flag on any day which the national flag is displayed. So this is permissive language. It's not mandatory language. So the state or agency does not have to comply with this. It does give the option for complying. And on line 6, you'll see it's authorized to adopt, the agency is authorized to adopt rules relating to the display of the honor and remember flag. Again, on page 2, line 10, you can also see that this is also extended to any county, city, town, or political subdivision of the state as well. Page 2, line 15, paragraph C there is basically the description of the flag. Goes on to page 3. And then you'll also see on page 3, line 16, nothing in this section shall be construed to require the acquisition, erection, and maintenance of a flagpole or to display the honor and remember flag where a pole or display of the national flag does not already exist. So it's not an onerous bill. It doesn't require anything, but it certainly allows us to honor those who have made the ultimate sacrifice. I did distribute, if you look in your box, a copy of the flag as it is flown below the American flag. And then the second page, you'll see what the flag, all the elements on the flag mean. There have been many levels of endorsement and adoption throughout the country. 22 states have adopted this already. 7 have endorsed it. And almost every other state, in fact, every other state is in the process of doing it as well. So I ask your favorable consideration.
Question on the bill? Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Emmerich's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 20, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. House Bill 20 has passed the committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 114. Reading clerk will read in the House Bill.
House Bill 114, Engrossed, Service and Assistance Animals, sponsored by Representative Brown, an act relating to service and assistance animals, was referred to Committee Number 6, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Anselmi Dalton, Barnard, Boner, Emmerich, and Moniz. Senator Emmerich, Chair.
Heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Emmerich?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 114 do pass. And for an explanation, I will yield to Senator Anselmi Dalton.
Senator Anselmi Dalton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House Bill number 14, House Bill 114 is a good little bill. I've actually had a pig in my hotel, so let's start with the pig talk first. But currently under Wyoming law, the reason for this bill is there's only protection for service dogs. So this bill basically is to try to bring in the ADA law, the American with Disabilities Act, and also the FHA, which is the Federal Housing Act, and sort of have our statutes track and comply. So we'll go through the bill, but I kind of wanted to let you know what it's about in general. This law doesn't bring in any new protections for any other animals in public accommodations or entities. So what it does do is it brings protections for those who need service and assistance animals. And it also attempts to deter people that use these animals when they're not really afforded the protections under federal law. So we'll walk through this bill. Basically, on page one, it's an act relating to service and assistance animals. There is a difference. Service animals are used under ADA. A service animal is technically defined as either a dog or a miniature horse, and I have the references to miniature horses if anyone needs it, a certain height requirement, whatever else, okay? So those are the two animals that actually fall under the ADA. It's very confusing. I'm a hotel owner, and so it is confusing. We try not to break the law, but I'll try to work with my staff when I get back to get them more up on it. Then we go on, we specify certain penalties, we prohibit the killing or injuries of these animals, and we conform provisions of our statute to the federal law. So on page one, we really don't have much there. If you'll flip over to page two and follow along with me. On page two, essentially what we do is replace, essentially, on line 20, this is the critical piece, the service dog with service animal. Again, this is under ADA. This page only speaks to the ADA protections, okay? So it's only dog or miniature horse here. So don't be confused by that. And on this, we offer only protection for the service animals, not the assistance animals. On page three, this is where a person can't be discriminated against in leasing a rental of residential property under the FHA laws. And that's where the Federal Housing Administration and the ADA do not conform with each other. Don't ask me why. It's the federal government. You guys figure that out. But assistance animals, they can be any kind of animals. They can be a pig. They can be a dog. They can be a snake. So they could be a badger. Chris Rosses wants a honey badger. And so essentially, though, the FHA requires landlords to take in the assistance animals. And so on page three, we bring the Federal Fair Housing Act, and it obviously protects more animals than just dogs or miniature horses. And we're just trying to conform our law with with federal law. Section D on page three, lines 13 through 17, it provides protection to somebody when an agent or employee of some hotel, for example, such as mine, permits a service animal or an animal believed in good faith to be a service animal, they will not be liable for any damage caused by the animal. That just tries to protect people when they're trying in good faith not to violate the ADA. Then we're going to go on to page four. And on page four, this is conforming language in the first paragraph. We're just referencing our state statute. Then paragraph B is the protection clause. This tries to deter the use of animals that are actually not trained to help people that have disabilities. It's unfortunate because even our hotel or different places, people are a little suspicious when people wander in with these animals and they're running amok. And it's also unfortunate, as we heard in testimony in our committee, when someone actually does have a severe disability and uses a service dog to help them perform tasks, a blind person, and maybe another dog is running amok in a grocery store and runs into them. It's just we're trying to deter people from interfering with these dogs that have been highly trained to help people that are actually in unfortunate circumstances and really do need the help. And so basically we say they're guilty of a misdemeanor and could be fined not more than $750, and that's on page 4, 8 through 13. Then we go on, and we basically then on page 4 pull in the definitions from the Federal Fair Housing Act, the assistance animal definition. Again, remember, this is any animal. As long as you get a permit and you have a letter from a doctor that says you need this animal for either comfort or assistance. So these are animals that are not under the ADA, not the dog or miniature horse. And then on page 5, we again pull in the federal language. We refer to the CFR, the Code of Federal Regulations, to define enrollment at 5, 6, and 7, and 8, the different public accommodation places, entities, service animals. And then on page 5, we again pull in. This is when you injure or kill a service or assistance animal. So on page 5, we pull in the service animal or assistance animal language to say that if you hurt or injure it, that you can be liable to for a fine of $750. And then on page 6, we say that, again, we pull in the service animal or assistance animal language and say that if you kill or you hurt it, that you will be liable to replace it or retrain it. And then section On line 19, they repeal a section of the current definition of service dog because, again, it's defined now as a service animal, which, again, is the dogs and miniature horses. And with that, that's the end of my presentation on dogs, pigs, cats, cows, and every other animal. But it is a serious problem for people that do have disabilities, so I would ask for your favorable consideration to help these people out. And for any questions?
Questions on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Emmerich's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 114, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
House Bill 114 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 136. The reading clerk will read in the House bill.
House Bill 136, Campus Carry, sponsored by Representative Biteman, an act relating to weapons, was referred to Committee Number 1, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Christensen, Hicks, Kinski, and Nethercott. No, Senator Anselmi Dalton. Senator Christensen, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 136, engrossed campus carry. To present the bill will be Senator Bouchard.
Senator Bouchard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a good little bill. Basically, it's just going to I'll go through the bill real quick. As we go through on page 1, you'll see 68104. A, 2, and 3, Romanet. Those are permit only. So what we're doing with campus carry is people that have been approved and have a permit to carry. No one else, no other constitutional carry, no other that, just permits. That said, as we go on to the next page of the bill, there's a section there, T, that's amended. T is the section that where all the restrictions are in the law, Mr. Chairman, and what it's doing is that we're just making an amendment there. As we go down to 68104, you'll see the exception that actually adds this provision into the existing T. So that's it on the bill. It's a good bill. It's going to restore the people's right to carry. The campuses have had the right or the ability to allow carry, but they even admitted in committee that they don't want to do it. So in this case, local control isn't working. We're not allowing people that have received permits to carry it and everywhere else in every other place in Wyoming. We're letting them, you know, we're saying they can carry everywhere in Wyoming, but not on this campus. So I think it's a good bill, and I'll stand for any questions.
Questions on the bill?
Question.
I do have a standing committee amendment, it looks like, to me. Oh, okay. I got you. Okay. My mistake. Question being called for on House Bill 136. You ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Christensen's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 136, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Division being called. Thank you. All those in favor, please stand. All those opposed, stand. That motion, or that motion has failed, or the bill has failed. Committee of the Whole. Vote was ayes, 12 ayes and 17 noes. Yep. Pursuant to Senate Rule 6-5, having failed a standing division vote, a roll call vote is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Agar?
Aye.
Aye. Anderson?
No.
No. Anselmi Dalton?
No.
No. Baldwin?
No.
No. Barnard?
Aye.
Aye. Boner?
Aye.
Aye. Bouchard?
Aye.
Aye. Burns?
No.
No. Case?
Aye.
Aye. Christensen?
Aye.
Aye. Cope?
No.
No. Dockstetter?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Aye. Ellis?
No.
No. Emmerich?
No.
No. Hastert? No. Hicks?
Aye.
Aye. Kinski?
Aye.
Aye. Landon?
No.
No. Meyer?
Aye.
Aye. Moniz?
No.
No. Nethercott? No. Pappas?
No.
No. Perkins?
Aye.
Aye. Peterson?
No.
No. Rothfuss?
No.
No. Scott?
No.
Von Platern?
No.
No. Wasserberger?
No.
No. President Bebout?
Aye.
Aye. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 13 aye, 17 no.
House Bill 136, having failed a roll call vote pursuant to Senate Rule 6-5A, is deemed indefinitely postponed. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 137. The reading clerk will read in the House bill.
House Bill 137, engrossed. Wyoming Repeal Gun-Free Zones Act, sponsored by Representative Beitman, an act relating to weapons, was referred to Committee Number 1, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Christensen, Hicks, Kinski, and Nethercott. Noes, Senator Anselmi Dalton. Senator Christensen, Chair.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Christensen.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 137, Engrossed, Wyoming Repeal Gun-Free Zones Act. To carry this bill will be Senator Bouchard.
Senator Bouchard.
Mr. Chairman, I brought another good bill here that this that we could kill, I guess. So this is a bill that basically undoes what we have in statute, where we can't have weapons in government meetings, and it's just as simple as the other bill. So it has on section one created to read. Page two, it goes on to say that people are lawfully carrying weapons, and under these sections here, it is permitted people only. Again, people with permits. I mean, I think we should be able to trust the people with permits. Anyway, simple bill. If you go down on the page two, line 11, it's just section T again. It's doing a change in section T. And with that, I'll stand for questions.
Questions on the bill. Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to rise in support of this bill and I support the last one as well. Mr. Chairman, I really do believe in the Second Amendment. I believe the Supreme Court has made it through the Heller case quite clear that it's an individual right to have your ability to protect yourself and to have firearms. Mr. President, this bill only involves permit holders. And let's talk about permit holders. Permit holders are very law-abiding citizens. They value the Second Amendment. They value their ability to legally carry a weapon. They have an almost nil record of anything ever happening when a permit holder has a weapon, not involving the weapon, not involving any other crime. They're very law-abiding citizens. Mr. President, or Mr. Chairman, here's the issue that I see. We don't know, look out there in the gallery right now, did these people go through a metal detector? I don't mean to use a prop, that's probably not appropriate, but the people watching us right now, they weren't screened for weapons. There's no screening. There's no screening in public meetings all around the state. The only screening I'm aware of are courtrooms, and that doesn't apply in this case, Mr. Chairman. So the question is, if anyone can carry a gun, do you want people to carry it legally or do you want it to carry it illegally?
the people that are prohibited right now that may be carrying a weapon, they're not following the law. That's the whole point. Law-abiding citizens follow the law. Permit holders, law-abiding citizens, follow the law. They don't get involved in other crimes. Bad things don't happen because they have weapons. I support this bill.
Further discussion. Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I rise in support of 137. And the reason I do is that, you know, there's an old saying that why do bank robbers rob banks, and then that's where the money is. And there's also a reason why people go to gun-free zones to commit mass mayhem. And that's because that's where the guns aren't. And it's essentially you draw a target around those areas that are gun-free zones. And a little anecdotal, used to serve with a representative from Goshen County. He's a permit holder, former highway patrolman, and he kept a snub nose, I think it was a .357, in his briefcase. And when we were at the Tax Reform 2000 committee, I think it was up in Riverton, you know, I saw it in his briefcase, and he opened it up, and I thought, well, I don't know about that. And then I got to thinking, and especially just here lately, you know, when you hear about the things that happen in public areas, and it would comfort me, Mr. Chairman, to know that if we had a ex-law enforcement person or a person that had a concealed weapon permit, that had the training, actually had that firearm on their person to protect me and protect the people that were at our meetings. Because we're not immune from this, Mr. Chairman. And I think it's incumbent upon us, you know, to take the necessary steps, I think, to ensure that the people that come to our meetings basically have some level of protection. Now, of course, in this building, we have uniformed highway patrolmen here, and we have other folks that can protect us. But when we're out around the country, when we're having meetings in different places, and we're having a very controversial topic that comes up that we discuss, there's some decisions that can't be made if you don't have someone in that room that has the ability to make them and to protect the people that are in that room. And, Mr. Chairman, we can't afford to have highway patrolmen in every meeting that we go to. We necessarily don't know what issues are going to be controversial when we meet, Mr. Chairman. And our society is very fluid across this entire nation and as well as the state. And so you don't know who may be coming to and from your meetings, whether they're within the state or whether they're from outside of the state, that necessarily don't agree with what we're trying to do. And, Mr. Chairman, sometimes these issues that we deal with rise to a very, I guess, high level of concern, and sometimes people do things that necessarily defies all reason. And in those circumstances, Mr. Chairman, if I had one of my colleagues that happened to be a permit holder and had that firearm readily available to defend everybody that was in that room, I'd feel a lot more safer, Mr. Chairman. And for that reason, I would hope that you would support this bill.
Further discussion. President Bebop.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate, on and in favor of this bill. And how many of you in Wyoming, whether you were not in Wyoming when you were young, but when was the first time you had an opportunity to have a weapon in your hand, a rifle, a .22? I look back my life, it was probably when I was 4 or 5 or 6, 7, something like that. And one of the great things I had with my father is to teach me how to shoot, how to respect wildlife, how to appreciate and understand guns and what they stand for. Remember, the Senate, my dad and I never talked about the Second Amendment. He never said that this is the right to bear arms and something that's so important to states like Wyoming, to our country like ours. But it was always implied and always there, and I never quite thought about it until later on in life. And I look at this bill, and the thing and the reason I support this, it's pretty basic. And, you know, right now, we don't really know or understand who's out there with guns that are concealed. We don't know about them. We don't know. But if we have this bill passed, at least we know those that have concealed carries have gone through the permitting process. And they're people that respect the law. They're people that are willing to do a background check, to have be fingerprinted. So you're putting a weapon in the hands of those that understand and respect the law. And I'd rather have people around me in any kind of a situation that may have that rather than those that would have them anyway without going through the permitting process. So, you know, this is a little different than the last one. I voted for the last one, but give this some favorable consideration and think about not only the Second Amendment, but when you look around a crowd of people in a certain environment and you look out there, you know, you might feel more comfortable knowing there's someone out there with a concealed carry that has gone through the permitting process, has understood and complied with the law, and is out there for all those reasons. So I'd ask for your favorable consideration.
Further discussion on the bill. Senator Ruffus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm against the bill, and there's a couple of concerns. This isn't, in my view, a Second Amendment bill. And the reason I say that is when you look at the Heller decision, which was referenced, and a decision that was penned by Justice Scalia, who was certainly one of the most conservative individuals in the court, he notes in the decision, like most rights, the right secured by the Second Amendment is not unlimited. Nothing in our opinion should be taken to cast doubt on longstanding prohibitions on the possession of firearms by felons and the mentally ill, or laws forbidding the carrying of firearms in sensitive places such as schools and government buildings, or laws imposing conditions and qualifications on the commercial sale of firearms. Mr. Chairman, this goes a few steps beyond and basically says, no, you can't provide any limitations on who carries a weapon into a public meeting, whether there is security available, whether it's against the interests of the locality, of the community, of the county, of the legislature. The rules are taken away. The local control is taken away by this piece of legislation. It goes far beyond what the Supreme Court has recognized as being within the confines of the Second Amendment. And for those reasons, I'd urge the body to reject this legislation as well.
Senator Bouchard.
Mr. Chairman, the problem with just using the Heller versus D.C. case is that was particular to a case. The same courts have also said that the state can have a stronger protection than what the Second Amendment is. And in this case, we have that here. In Wyoming, it says shall not be denied. And so I don't agree that the Heller case in D.C. D.C. doesn't have a constitution for their territory. We do. And our protections override anything that they're talking about on that. And this isn't an absolute right.
For discussion, Senator Burns.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, this bill is called the Wyoming Repeal Gun-Free Zones Act. I was curious when I was looking at this because if you look in the statute, if I recall, there are 10 gun-free zones listed in the states, in the statutes. There are 10 places you cannot carry guns. Schools and government meetings, legislature, things like that. Well, how come if this is the repeal Gun-Free Zones Act, then how come all of those aren't in this bill? For instance, courtrooms. Well, courtrooms are not a good idea because people get emotionally overwrought in courtrooms and it is a recipe for disaster. I think it's no less the case with government meetings and not just the legislature. We're talking county commission meetings. We're talking city and town council meetings. Things can very easily get out of hand. And if there's a gun there, things can even get even worse. The same thing can happen bars. That's a gun-free zone. So my question, I guess, for the sponsors of this is, if this is the repeal Gun-Free Zones Act, how come you haven't thrown in all the gun-free zones and repealing all of them?
go to Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chairman, I'm against this fine little bill. I am a concealed carry permit holder, and my wife is also. A lot of our friends are. That doesn't mean that we're proficient and are able to save your life in a meeting. Most of the people that I know that have a concealed carry permit have it because they might have a shotgun in their back seat of their pickup when they're going bird hunting, and they put a coat over it. That's a concealed weapon. A concealed weapon charge is a felony. They can lose their doctor's license or dentist license, those kind of things. So a lot of them have it because of that. They don't have it to protect you in a public meeting. And probably they couldn't. Last year you heard me talk about the freeze. The military trains you for it. I'm sure the Highway Patrol does. You pull your weapon out, you shoot somebody. You don't stand there and talk to them. And the problem you'd have with everybody protecting you is they pull their weapon, they wouldn't know who to shoot, and they wouldn't shoot because you have that freeze moment where you're afraid to pull the trigger on a human being. So this is not going to protect you in a public meeting. Good example of that is that smoke-filled room. Who do you shoot? That's the problem. And if you're trained to do that, like an ex-patrolman or ex-government guy maybe you're trained to shoot and know who you're going to shoot. But if everybody pulls a gun in a meeting, who are you going to shoot? So on and against this bill.
Senator Bouchard.
Mr. Chairman, you know, we've heard a lot of these arguments when we did constitutional carry in 2011, that the sky was going to fall, this isn't going to protect you, everybody's going to get shot, this is going to be the Wild Wild West. None of that happened. It really didn't. I mean, the media called me a year after that bill was enacted, and they said we couldn't find anything that changed, and the crime rate actually went down. I heard a lot of, this isn't going to protect you. This isn't going to protect you. But we see cases every day where concealed carry permit holders across the nation defend themselves because they were carrying in a state that requires that you have a permit. In this case, what we're doing, we don't even need a permit in Wyoming, but we're saying that let's afford the people that have permits a little more latitude and carrying places, you know, in one place that they haven't been able to be carried. The other question I can answer for the senator from Sheridan, we've had bills that had more areas. They get killed just as fast. So this is just a little nip at the whole list there on Section T of the restrictions. So I hope that answers questions. I mean, look, we had a police officer down in I'm trying to think of the state. It's to the south of us. It's almost on the border. What happened with this officer? He's on the ground getting beat up, and it was a permit holder that came to his rescue. The permit holder drew his gun, held the gun on the subject. The officer said, shoot him, shoot him. He didn't pull the trigger until the officer even instructed him. We just always hear that there's going to be a Wild Wild West and there's going to be bullet holes all over the walls and the streets. It's not happening. We don't see those facts. What we see is responsible gun owners that have permits. And there's just case after case where they're defending themselves. And that's what the Article 1, Section 24 says, that I have a right to defend myself. And that's what this bill is about. And I urge your support on this bill.
Senator Case.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I think it might be nice to actually compare the way the Wyoming Constitution grants the right to bear arms and the U.S. Constitution. The Second Amendment of the U.S. Constitution says, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. And there's been a lot of controversy about whether it is the militia or not. And the case I referred to earlier said
No, it's really the individual that has the right. But, you know, that's compared to what Wyoming took a stand for in Section 24 of Article 1. It says the right to bear arms, the right of citizens to bear arms in defense of themselves and of the state shall not be denied. That's Wyoming's constitution. Much clearer, much more to the point of the bill that we're talking about. I don't think gun-free zones are good anywhere. I honestly don't. I don't believe they're good for schools. I think they're killing zones, actually. And I think just because we're very lucky that we haven't been caught up in the craziness of other places, you know, thank God for that, Mr. Chairman. But I am not worried about people legally carrying permitted people, background check, fingerprinted, registered, permitted people carrying a firearm. Doesn't bother me a bit. What worries me are the people that would be illegal carry, because we can't put enough officers in our public places. We can't build enough metal detectors. And so, Mr. Chairman, I definitely support this bill. I think it's a big step in the right direction.
Senator Von Flater.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question for the sponsor. Since it's still illegal to carry on university and or community colleges, this bill says any meeting of the legislature or a committee thereof on public property. Would this be in direct conflict with that? Since we're having interim topics, is most of our meetings these days. So we have a committee meeting at the university or on a community college campus, which we do use. Would this conflict with that? Would somebody be able to argue that they could carry on the public property because we were having a legislative meeting?
Senator Anselmi Dalton.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I could go down tomorrow and get a concealed carry permit, too. I have the form from Dwayne Pacheco. I can get fingerprinted. I couldn't shoot a gun to save my life or to save yours. It doesn't comfort me that we could have everyone carrying a gun in this legislature and just have shootout at the OK Corral. I feel a lot more comfortable having a Wyandotte officer back there and taking down the target. Trust me, you don't want me to be defending your life. You want me to go down with the Titanic.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, I thank you for that clarification from the good senator from Rock Springs, and I am thankful that she's not going to try to defend my life, given her previous statements. Mr. Chairman, you know, we've heard a lot of discussions about this scenario and that scenario. Well, let me give you another scenario, and if you'll allow me just a moment to prognosticate on this issue.
Eight seconds.
Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Senator Hicks. We'll allow this. Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, this time I'm a timed event cowboy, so you can't get it right the first time. So tomorrow the sun's going to come up. We pass this bill. Wyoming's going to go about their business. Next week they'll go about their business, and a year from now they'll go about their business. The simple fact, this is not going to change the way we do business in Wyoming if we pass it. It's just not. It's our culture. All these hypothetical things of shooting people and saving people, realistically, is just hyperbole. This is Wyoming. Everybody's got guns. Just basically says, we're going to be Wyoming. You can carry a gun if you're a licensed concealed carrier. Nothing's going to change in the state if we pass this legislation. Mr. Chairman, this is not a boogeyman.
Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Christensen's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation On House Bill 137, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Chair's in doubt. Division being called. All those in favor, please stand. All those opposed, please stand. That bill passes. President Bebout.
Would you please announce the vote?
16 in favor, 14 opposed.
Thank you.
All right. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 194. The reading clerk will read in the House bill.
House Bill 194, Engrossed, School Safety and Security, sponsored by Representative Eklund. An act relating to school safety and security was referred to Committee Number 4, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Coe, Ellis, Pappas, Rothfuss, and Wasserberger. Senator Coe, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Coe.
Mr. Chairman, move in committee the whole rights report. Do so with due pass recommendation on House Bill 194. There is a standing committee amendment. I ask it to be read in at this time.
House Bill 194, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Engrossed Copy, page 1, line 14.
Senator Coe.
Mr. Chairman, move that amendment and defer to Senator Barnard to explain the bill.
Senator Barnard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the Senate, I bring to you House Bill Number 194, School Safety and Security. An act relating to school safety and security, allowing possessions of firearms by school district employees on school property. This is the important part, providing rulemaking authority to school districts, specifying confidentiality of records, and making conforming amendments. About 3 years ago, a very smart and good-looking senator brought a bill to this committee. It was an extensive review of how to have a guns perhaps placed in schools. It passed, thank you very much, 34 and 0 against. We didn't pursue that, but I think the idea was brought out there that school boards should have the responsibility and can have the responsibility to make decisions that allow firearms to be in the schools. First of all, let me say that there's no school and there's no school bill that will ever totally make a school safe or secure. But hopefully with this bill, we might move a step closer. Some people might ask, why do we need this bill? We can turn to about 20, 25 years ago, Colkville, well, a little school off to the west, small rural school, had some people come in, overpower the school. It was very moving to hear about that and to learn about it, and it's really a miracle that no one except the two perpetrators were killed. A lot of our rural schools have response times by the sheriffs of anywhere from 15 sometimes to 40 minutes. A lot can happen in that time. If you stop and think about school safety and a shooter in a school, probably the most critical time is the first 5 or 8 minutes. By that time, most of the action is already done. So the question is, who's there to defend those students in that first 5 or 8 minutes? The answer is the teachers and the staff. School boards have the authority and have the authority to do many things for their students. And they have the authority to represent their district and what the districts think. Some districts in our state would not want any guns in their school. I understand that. Other districts, where they have maybe rural schools, would appreciate that. They've asked for these, for a chance to have their teachers defend them. Mr. Chairman, the whole idea of this bill is to give the school boards the authority to have the teachers be trained and be able to carry concealed. Let's turn to page 2. On line 1, it talks about the teachers will have a valid concealed carry permit. We've just heard a really great testimony that just because you have a concealed weapons permit doesn't mean you're a shooter. We'll take care of the rest of that later on. Page 2, line 12, employee means any person employed under contract with the Board of Trustees of a school district. This could be anybody from superintendents, assistant superintendents, principals, assistant principals, teachers, guidance counselors, librarians, teachers, aide, coaches, business managers, secretaries, administrative assistants, janitors, and other people. These people can, if they're trained right, be able to protect our students. On page 3, it talks about, on line 2, of establishing an application and approval method. On page 3, line 8, requiring any person pursuant to this section to maintain a firearm on his person at all times or in a concealed biometric container, lockbox, within direct control of the individual. The superintendent will notify the parents, the guardians, that the district has the ability and that some of these employees may be carrying firearms, so people will be able to know what they were. The superintendent shall notify, in page 3, line 18, the superintendent of the district shall notify all law enforcement agencies with jurisdiction over the area of the location and the names of all the employees who received the permission to carry the firearms. Hopefully the police and sheriffs will know which teachers have the firearms. If there is a shootout, they'll be able to recognize those teachers. The identities of the employees who received permission to carry firearms from the District Board of Trustees will be kept confidential so that people can't find out who they are and perhaps come in and shoot those teachers first. Nothing in this section, on page 4, line 4, nothing in this section shall authorize school district personnel to carry a firearm concealed or otherwise on or into a facility or other school district without the expressed approval of the Board of Trustees and notification of parties as required by this section. So a teacher just can't say, well, I'm trained, I'm going to go protect my students, here's my gun, and pack it in. They have to go through an approval process that's okayed by the school board. That there's a lot of details, Mr. Chairman, to this process. It's a long process, and it takes time. But if it's done right, it will be a worthwhile process. And this is very important. On page 4, line 11, nothing in this section shall authorize a student of a school district to carry a firearm, concealed or otherwise, into any facility in our school district. Mr. Chairman, I hope got an idea about this bill. I have really great faith in our school boards. I think they represent our communities. They will know whether or not to put guns in the schools. They will know the teachers and their abilities, which teachers should perhaps be able to have a gun and protect it, which teachers shouldn't. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to ask your favorable support on this bill. Someday in my life, I'd like to walk up to a school and see a sign that says, we love our students. Our teachers and staff are armed and trained to protect them.
We're on the Standing Committee Amendment. Senator Coe.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, are we on the Standing Committee
Amendment? Standing Committee Amendment, yes.
Okay, members of the Senate, the Standing Committee Amendment does about four different things. We go in on page 1, line 14, after regulations insert, in consultation with local law enforcement. We thought that was important to be able to use the local resources. The school board can use these local resources that are available in most communities. Page 2, line 6. is an amendment that came in towards the end, and we take out the language on page 2, line 6, any facilities of the school district, and insert school facilities or other areas designated by the Board of Trustees. This is just a protection to make sure we know what areas we're talking about. Big part of the amendment you'll see is on lines 10 through 23. And we had extensive testimony from a training-type expert, retired, that lives up in my country, up in northwest Wyoming, that spent a lot of time training and doing different things with firearms. We put in, under paragraph 3, little I, paragraphs A and B, requirements for these individuals. For instance, in paragraph A, initial course of training comprised of not less than 16 hours of live fire handgun training, 8 hours of scenario-based training using non-lethal training. Paragraph B, annual firearm qualification and documented recurrent training of not less than 12 hours with an approved instructor. Now, this is pretty extensive, and this is a policy decision that we have to make here. Do we have enough faith in our local school boards to say that they'll go out there in consultation with local law enforcement and make sure these individuals that they designate are qualified to be doing what they're doing? Or do we think we should have more formal training? And we could maybe divide this section out if somebody wants to. But the testimony was compelling that we heard in committee, I thought, from this gentleman. He did a great job of saying or convincing us that, boy, if you're going to have somebody that has a concealed carry permit, that's an employee of the district that the local school board has designated to do what they're doing, let's make sure they're trained properly. And then finally, in the standing committee amendment, Mr. Chairman, paragraph 4, this provides a process for the revocation or suspension of that authorization under this section for an employee to carry a firearm on school property so that we can revoke that designation that the local school board might have made with this individual. With that, I'd ask for the question on the standing committee amendment or discussion.
Discussion on the amendment. Senator Bouchard.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I have a question. I mean, we should be careful here on this, on section, on the preemption. It's on page 5, starting on line 9. The reason
we are on the amendment.
We are, but it has something pertinent to the amendment. And so the reason that we have a state preemption is because years ago, before we were a shall-issue state, we had a patchwork all around the state. And that's, I mean, I think it was Lander that had it. They passed a law, local law, said you couldn't carry guns. It got worse from there, and then we came in, and the legislature put this preemption in. And this is similar to what other states have. So when we open this up and we start, and there's an exception, you can see it in the underlined and in section 21.3.132, and now we've got this amendment that's here that says other areas. And that's wide open. That just basically says that the school district can decide any other areas they want. So I think there needs, I mean, possible we could divide the amendment there between 3 and 7, maybe come back with a little bit better amendment for that piece there, and you know, vote on that one as a separate piece there.
Further discussion on the amendment. Senator Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. During the committee, we were talking in crafting this legislation. We were, the goal of what we're trying to achieve is that if a particular school district authorizes a teacher to carry, that doesn't all automatically create a situation where that teacher can carry it into any school within that district. And Laramie County, one for an example, has dozens of elementary schools. And so if a person out in a more rural district had this permission and wanted to use it as a blanket ticket to be everywhere or in any other school, that was my concern. The additional, so we were trying to craft the right language, and we ran into some difficulties, so we would definitely welcome any language that would make this more clear. I think one of the challenges that we have is when you look at the definition of employee, you'll see that includes things like bus drivers. And so we're contemplating situations where it is a little open, where these drivers will be driving around town. So I'd encourage the body to leave this language in, and if we need to come in on another second reading amendments that better clarifies, I'd be welcome to any suggestions.
Senator Walsenberger.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to speak on behalf of the amendment on page 2, line 6, and that was specifically done because of buses, actually. And so we were thinking that there would be times that you might need that, and I would remind the body that it's been probably 15 years since the Israel shooting where students were shot on a bus. And so that was a part of the reasoning of the good senator from Laramie County and why she brought that amendment. And I would urge you to leave that specific part.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I can see why this training is important in the urban setting where you might have a very chaotic situation. And, Mr. Chairman, it would be dangerous to have somebody who was armed and wasn't trained. But, Mr. Chairman, I wonder how well this applies to the local, the small rural school, the one-room country school, where they might want to authorize the teacher to have a firearm to deal with either one or two intruders came off the highway. That's not a chaotic situation. It's a pretty clear situation. Or maybe what she needs to deal with is a skunk or something like that. The things you can get into in the rural areas. So I'm wondering if we adopt this, if on second reading we might want to think about should we carve those out, because this does strike me as overkill in the rural areas.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to clarify a couple of things on the amendment, when we're looking at the page 2, line 6 language, one of the considerations with regard to the specificity of areas specified by the school districts was obviously the school board would not have any authority over property or areas that they did not have control over. So the possibility of an overreach outside where there is the school board specifying areas beyond their reach, in our discussion, since they had no legal authority, there wasn't a lot of concern that that would potentially be the case. It was something that we talked about, but I couldn't imagine the school board pointing to an area over which they had no authority and saying you're entitled to have a concealed carry in that area. With regard to the rural setting for the training requirements, the individual that we had that provided the testimony, he was a technical expert in this area and had spent over 37 years in training for these types of situations, was quite specifically testifying with regard to rural school areas. That was the interest of the individual, and it was very compelling testimony. We can certainly provide some more materials from that individual and some background, but Mr. Chairman, based on that testimony and based on the analysis that he provided with what other states did, 24 hours of training was really the minimum. The legislation passed in other states that were mentioned included circumstances of a minimum of 40. This was a rural state. Another state that was less rural had a minimum of 80 hours. So in the view of that individual, nobody should be permitted in any school setting where there was a potential threat to have a weapon with less than this amount of minimum training, regardless of rural or urban. Based on the testimony, I would anticipate the urban settings would actually require much more, but that would be up to the school board, according to this amendment, on and for the amendment.
Senator Barnard.
Mr. Chairman, on and for the amendment, as I listened to the testimony and realized of the past bill that I introduced, training is absolutely critical. And as a good senator from the Ivory Tower just talked about, we could ask for way more training. I think this is reasonable training for when we ask our teachers to put their lives on the line like that. One thing I would like to explain to the Senate is that most of our sheriff's departments have officers that are trained in this shooting. And while it would be very expensive maybe to go to the police academy and be trained, you can be trained in your own town. by these authorized people. And a lot of these sheriff's officers will do this training for no cost.
Question being called for on the amendment. All those in favor of Senator Coe's motion to adopt the standing committee amendment, amendment number one to Senate file or House Bill 194, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Amendment passes. There is a committee of the whole amendment. Would the reading clerk please read in the committee of the whole amendment?
House Bill 194, committee of the whole amendment number one to engrossed copy, page 4, line 4.
Senator Coe.
Mr. Chairman, move committee the whole amendment number one to House Bill 194. This is a conforming amendment brought to me by staff because we refer to employees throughout the bill, and we found one spot on page 4, line 5, that talks about district personnel. So strictly a conforming amendment. Ask for support of the amendment.
Move for the discussion on the amendment. Question being called for. We missed a row. We'll wait until they see it. You have a copy now? Okay. No further discussion on the amendment? Okay. Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Coe's motion to adopt the Committee of the Whole Amendment, number one, to House Bill 194, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That amendment carries. Back on the bill. For the discussion on the bill, Senator Coe.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. In support of the bill, my good friend from Evanston referred to a tall, thin, good-looking guy a couple years ago that did a local control amendment on a gun bill. I don't know who he was talking about, but...
You was talking about him.
Exactly.
You.
Maybe. Members of the Senate, I believe in local control, and that's exactly what this bill does. It's all about local control. We have local elected officials that I always have a problem when we come down here and legislate and we supersede what they're elected to do. This takes local school boards and understands that we have 48 different districts out there, 48 different districts with different demographics. We got some really small districts. Or we have a district like we're in right now where they have 8 SROs in this district. But this gives the flexibility to, for instance, in my district, we have four rural schools if you take in a Metisi. And districts want this. All three of my districts up in my area wanted us to bring this if we have local control. So that's what the bill's about. It's about local control. I think it's a good bill. I think it provides a need that is needed out there to protect our kids in rural schools. Ask that you support House Bill 194.
Further discussion on the bill. Senator Bouchard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, we heard some things about buses, and I want to caution you when you have a bill that you haven't been really clear about. And now you have a bunch of different school districts, and we're talking about local control, but we're abrogating these rights. Those school boards do not take an oath to uphold the Constitution. And so if we're going to do this, we got to be sure it's clear. When someone gets on a bus that was there to protect those kids, and they go on a field trip or to another school, to an event, where is that person going to leave their gun? I mean, if we're going to do this, they should do it statewide, all the school districts, because we're going to create a patchwork, and what's going to happen is there's going to be a teacher that goes into another school district when he had all the best intentions to protect the children, and now we have a problem. And like I said, it all focuses on we're abrogating those rights to someone who doesn't take the oath to uphold the Constitution. So I'll leave it at that.
Further discussion on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Coe's motion, the one that the committee of the whole rises to report that do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 194, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. House Bill 194 has passed the committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 161. The reading clerk will read in the House bill.
House Bill 161, Divorce Residency, sponsored by Representative Pelkey, an act relating to domestic relations, was referred to Committee Number 1, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Anselmi Dalton, Christensen, Hicks, Kinski, and Nethercott. Senator Christensen, Chair.
You heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Christensen?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the committee of the whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable favorable recommendation on House Bill 161, and to carry the bill will be Senator Case.
Senator Hastert.
Conflict.
Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I bring to House Bill 161. Haven't spent a lot of time with this, but it's a pretty simple bill. It just simply requires that it says no divorce shall be granted unless one of the parties has resided in the state for 60 days. You know, it's just clarifying that that's the filing for the marriage or solemnized in the state, and one of the parties has resided in the state for a time of the marriage. That's all it's doing, and it's just clarifying that just one of the parties have to be in reside in the state. I believe that's for a jurisdiction type of thing, but not 1,000% sure on that. But that's all it's doing. Pretty simple, short.
For discussion, Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Having quite a bit of expertise in this area. Mr. Chairman, that's exactly what the bill does. Right now, you have to be the plaintiff, the one filing for the divorce, to be the person that initiates it. But this says that either of the parties can reside in the state. For the state of Wyoming to have jurisdiction over divorce, and that's all it does. It'll make it a lot easier for a lot of folks, and hope you'll support it.
Are you ready for the question? Further discussion on the bill. All those in favor of Senator Christensen's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 161, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. House Bill 161 has passed the committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration has House Bill 116. The reading clerk will read in the House bill.
House Bill 116, Engrossed, Abortion Amendments, sponsored by Representative Steinmetz, an act relating to abortions, was referred to Committee Number 5, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Barnard, Hicks, Meyer, and Moniz. No, Senator Emmerich. Senator Hicks, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the committee of the whole rise and report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 116, and for an explanation of the bill, I would turn that over to Senator Meyer.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, first of all, this is an amendment to existing statute. The existing statute deals with trafficking in aborted body, basically aborted children. Live or viable aborted children. What this amendment seeks to do is a couple of different things. One, the current statute did not have any section in it that allowed for the legal organ or tissue donations to be made by the parent. And so this bill allows for that, and it also allows for a child or tissues or cells from a child delivered or by a miscarriage or any other medical condition which is not an abortion. The change that you see in this primarily, Mr. Chairman, in addition to the ones I mentioned, goes into the area where you include tissues or cells from an aborted child. The fines are the same as what they were previously in the previous statute. All the penalties remain the same. It simply goes in and adds tissue and cells and provides for the donation and the other exemptions that don't apply to the penalties, which are those donations by the parents and the other ones I mentioned. So it's a pretty simple bill. It's amending an existing statute that's already here, and I'd ask for the body's favorable consideration. Stand for questions.
Questions on the bill? Further discussion on the bill? Hearing none. Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Hicks's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report to do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 116, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
That bill carries. Division being called, all those in favor say aye, or all those in favor stand and say aye. No, just stand. This is House Bill 116.
18.
All those opposed, please stand. Okay. That bill passes. Count was 19 in favor, 10 opposed. House Bill 116 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 182.
House Bill 182, engrossed, abortion ultrasound information, sponsored by Representative Gray, an act relating to public health and safety. It was referred to Committee Number 5, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Barnard, Hicks, Meyer, and Moniz. No, Senator Emmerich. Senator Hicks, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Hicks?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report that it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 182 do pass. There is a standing committee amendment, if I could have that read in at this time.
House Bill 182, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, to engrossed copy, page 1, line 3.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, I move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 182, and for an explanation of the bill and the Standing Committee Amendment, I would ask that you call on Senator Meyer.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The first thing I'd like to do is work on the amendment. It does exceptions. I think that's important. That was an amendment that I made during committee. A little background on the amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Excuse me, hold on.
In?
Point of order. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it has been moved, Mr.
It has been moved and read in, yes.
Okay, thank you. All right. Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Now that we have that point of order taken care of, moving on to the amendment, Mr. Chairman, a little background on the amendment, the process. On the other side over there, they had some third reading action, and the exemptions were basically left on the sidelines when that took place in some divisions on some third reading amendments. We bring back these exemptions here, and this is an exemption to the physician basically asking the patient to be informed that there is an ultrasound available and a osculation, which is essentially a heartbeat is audible. So what these exemptions are, Mr. Chairman, is that shall not apply to a procedure informed with intent to save the life of a patient, ameliorate a serious risk of causing the patient substantial or irreversible impairment of a major bodily function, preserve the health of the unborn child, remove a dead or unborn child, or remove an ectopic pregnancy. Mr. Chairman, there is another exemption that's in the body of the bill, and that's except in the case of a medical emergency. So in addition to that blanket exemption, these are specific exemptions, and I'd ask for the body to favorably consider the standing amendment, committee amendment number one.
Question being called on standing committee amendment number one. All those in favor of Senator Hicks's motion to adopt the standing committee amendment number one to House Bill 182, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That amendment carries. Senator Hick, or Senator Meyer.
Right. Now that we have the bill in a proper format here to discuss, essentially what this bill seeks to do is provide the option for a person seeking an abortion to be informed that an active ultrasound or an auscultation, which is essentially listening to a heartbeat if it's audible, to know that that's an option. And it's, I think the important part of that particular thing can be found on lines 8 and 9, page 2, that it shall be of a quality consistent with standard medical practice in the community. So the physician has the, I guess, the duty to know what the standard medical practice is within the community. There were some discussions about different types of ultrasounds, some of them invasive, some of them non-invasive, and that's entirely up to the medical physician as far as what type of ultrasound would be offered. And it's entirely up to the patient as to whether or not that they avail themselves of an ultrasound or to hear a heartbeat. So in all regards, it's optional and it's a may. Except for the physician shall obtain a signed statement from the patient acknowledging that they provided the information in subsection A. And so it's essentially an informed consent. In one way, I think that would possibly help with the medical provider's cover in the event of any type of a subsequent lawsuit, perhaps, if they would have that checked off that they actually did provide for that. If there's any case or any remorse or anything from the patient and that was a case where they could possibly go back on the physician. So I think it provides some cover to physicians. Essentially, Mr. Chairman, that's the bill. It's permissive, and there's fairly broad exemptions as to the applicability as far as the physician's determination as to whether or not it's offered, and it's entirely permissive as to whether the patient wants to accept even an ultrasound or hear a heartbeat. Stand for any questions.
There is a committee of the whole amendment. Would the reading clerk please read in that committee of the whole amendment?
House Bill 182, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to engrossed copy, page 2, lines 11 through 18.
Senator Anselmi Dalton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 182. What this amendment does is it deletes on page 2 of the bill, lines 11 through 18, and renumbers accordingly. My concern is that this is really an unenforceable mandate, and it sort of it violates HIPAA statutes. I think the medical professional has a duty to do what is required. They're ethical people. They swear to it. And no one's going to go and investigate some woman's file to see if it's in there because it's confidential under HIPAA laws. So I just don't think this mandate to have them obtain a signed statement and file it in there is just extra paperwork for a physician, and I think it's pointless and should be eliminated from the bill. and ask for your favorable consideration.
Discussion on the Committee of the Whole Amendment number one to this House bill. Senator Bouchard.
Mr. Chairman, we just heard that this won't be looked at. It'll be stuck in the file. I think it's a great thing that doctors actually get paperwork, and I don't think there's any problem with what's there in the bill, so I'm against the amendment.
Further discussion on the amendment, Committee of the Whole Amendment. Senator Meyer.
Yeah, I guess I'd draw the body's attention to lines 14 through 18, which is part of the amendment that seeks to be deleted. It says the signed statement shall be placed in the patient's medical file and shall be treated as a confidential medical document under all applicable state and federal laws and regulations. So, Mr. Chairman, from that perspective, it is a confidential document. So it's the confidentiality is there. I stand corrected in my original assertion that the physician might be able to use this in a lawsuit because of the confidentiality aspect of it. So I guess ask that you vote against this amendment because the confidentiality is already maintained in the bill.
Further discussion on the Committee of the Whole Amendment. Senator Von Flatern.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Standing in support of the amendment, what we're doing with this bill is creating work for a doctor that cannot be verified. So why would you create paperwork that can't be verified? Not only that, we're stepping in the way of the doctor's procedure and telling him that we're smarter than he is by setting this whole procedure up and having to offer an ultrasound, and yet even in the bill it says you can't go verify that he did it. So to me it's adding extra work to a doctor that we can't verify if he did it or not. Standing on for the amendment.
Still on the Committee of the Whole Amendment. Senator Meyer.
Well, Mr. Chairman, and maybe some folks from the Tall Center from Natrona County can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that a lot of different things that physicians do or different things can be used in the aggregate, but they necessarily can't be used have any personal identifying information in. I know we do that with different things already as far as just having aggregate information to develop and to see whether there were trends or different things in different areas. So I think that's the only way you could use any of that information. You just can't have any personal identifiable information on it. You may be able to find out how many ultrasounds in the state were actually done, but you wouldn't be able to find out or how many were attempted, but you couldn't find out any personally identifiable information.
For the discussion on the Committee of the Whole Amendment, number one. Senator Nethercott.
Mr. Chairman, just for purposes of factual clarity here, the document requires the patient to sign it. So I'm pretty sure there's personally identifiable information on it. And absolutely this document is discoverable in any kind of litigation. So there's no HIPAA, there's no other confidentiality protections in the event there is litigation. Just factual accuracy for the body.
Further discussion on the amendment. Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Anselmi's Dalton's motion to adopt the Committee of the Whole Amendment number one to House Bill 182, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Chair is in doubt. Division. All those in favor, please stand. All those opposed, stand. That amendment passes. We are back on the bill. For the discussion on... Well, the vote was 16 in favor, 14 opposed to that amendment. Question, Senator Burns.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I have a question for the sponsors of the bill and then a statement on it. One is, I can't read anywhere here what the penalty is if a doctor violates this particular aspect of statute, especially now that the amendment has passed. And then as for a statement, the abortion issue has riled everybody for 44 years, and part of it is because it was a court decision and was basically yanked out of the area of politics, and so it could not be politically resolved. And and I really do understand the people who are pro-life on this and their great frustration. On the other hand, though, I don't see that this bill resolves anything other than for the government to start interfering in the doctor-patient relationship. We're suddenly telling a doctor what to say to the patient. Now, and it makes, to me and my little small government thinking, this is a horrifying establishment, a horrifying turn of events on things. I know people hate abortion, and they would do anything and want to do anything they can to try and postpone it or put it off, and that's exactly what this is. But I think it's, A, it's a futile gesture, and, B, I think it's a bad precedent to set.
For discussion on the bill. Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, on and for the bill, and I'm going to explain to you why and why I don't expect to change anybody's minds here. We all know what our position is, but what I want to do is take you back just a little bit and talk about why this is important, at least to me. Mr. Chairman, we started out the session this morning, and we pledged allegiance for one nation under God, and we do that every morning. We also, Mr. President, Mr. Chairman, we have this little thing called the Declaration of Independence, and within that declaration, at least two different places, it talks about God and nature's God, and then it says that all men are created equal. And that we are endowed with our Creator with those certain unalienable rights. First and foremost amongst all those is life. Mr. President, Mr. Chairman, in the Wyoming Constitution, we start with the very beginning of the preamble that says, "We, the people of the state of Wyoming, are grateful to God." I'm going to share with you a few excerpts, Mr. Chairman, with what that means. As a nation established under the laws of God, that's what it states in our declaration. It's what it says in our Constitution. We, as an elected body, have a larger responsibility than we do as an individual when it comes to these personal beliefs. But I want to share with you a few voices from the past that dealt with this issue. Samuel Adams explained at the Continental Congress, divine revelation assures that righteous exaltation a nation. He further went on and said, communities or nations are dealt with in this world by the wise and just ruler of the universe. He rewards or punishes them according to their general character. As a nation, we will be judged. Mr. Chairman, George Washington's first inaugural address, he summarized the same topic in his inaugural address saying that The favor smiles of heaven can never expect on a nation that disregards the eternal rules of order and right which heaven itself has ordained. Thomas Jefferson went on to opine that he says, I tremble for my country when I reflect that God is just and his justice cannot sleep forever. Members of the body, this is a very personal issue. But it really becomes an issue as so goes the state, so goes the nation. And I understand that each one of us has our own convictions. But I worry for where we're going as a country if we don't value the life that our founders valued in this country. On and for the bill.
For the discussion on the bill.
Questions.
Question on the bill. All those in favor of Senator Hicks's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 182, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
That bill carries. Division being called, all those in favor, please stand. All those opposed, please stand. House Bill 182, the vote was 19-10. House Bill 182 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 276.
House Bill 276, engrossed, recording legislative and other meetings, sponsored by Representative Halverson, an act relating to the legislature, was referred to Committee Number 7, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Case, Nethercott, Pappas, and Scott. Excused, Senator Agar. Senator Case, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Case?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a due pass recommendation on House Bill 276, recording legislative and other meetings. For an explanation of the bill, is Meyer going to do it or is Boner going to do it? Recording. Let's do it with Boner. He can do it. He's on track. I'm happy to do it as well, Mr. Chairman, but it's okay.
Senator Boner.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, what we have here is a piece of legislation that will help improve the transparency, especially during our interim discussions here in the legislature. So you'll see that the meat of the bill is really on page 2 with that additional language, basically saying that our legislative staff will prepare an audio recording of those interim committee meetings that will be made publicly available within 1 month of that meeting. So it's not going to affect our confidentiality laws. Currently, it's not going to affect when we go into executive session. It's just for what would normally be public information. We're going to make that publicly available for those of our constituents who maybe can't make it to each and every interim meeting that we have throughout this state. Okay, that's also on page 3. That's just that stipulation. Saying that it's not going to affect our confidentiality laws, so we're not really changing anything there except allowing for those interim committee meetings to have the same publicity, have the same access for our constituents as they have here when we're in session. So that's the idea behind the bill. Certainly stand for any questions.
Discussion on the bill. Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, I think that was an excellent presentation. There's just a couple points I might add, is that these recordings already exist. They're the interim recordings that our staff takes, and they are already a public record. They've been deemed to be a public record, and so they're available for someone to request them under Public Records Act. All this bill does is says we're going to post those on the Internet. We're not going to do anything special about the recordings. They're going to be the same quality that we get now, and they'll just be available
to the public. And they are already available. It's nothing new in that aspect, but it's through a public records request. Now they'll be posted, Mr. Chairman. We looked at lots of things about it. If you have concerns, we looked about how much computer needs this would be and how it would physically do. We had the director of the LSO and the former director of the LSO come to the committee and discuss that this basically isn't a big deal. They can accommodate it. And so that's why I was initially hesitant. I thought, oh, my gosh, this must be all sorts of troubles and things. And they testified that it wasn't, Mr. Chairman, and that they practically already do it now, and the posting is relatively trivial. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Further discussion. Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I'm aware of the recordings at interim meetings. I'm kind of curious. I didn't realize they were public documents at this point. And if that's the case, then I'm kind of curious as to why we don't record and include meetings during the session, too.
Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, basically it was in testimony, it was just the LSO staffed, attorney staffed meetings recorded and made available. And one point they did bring up, that right now they're actually being asked for these recordings, and they do give them out. And it creates actually a lot of work for them. So having them put on a server where people can just download them will actually create less work for the LSO staff.
Further discussion on the bill. Senator Ruffus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I'm curious about page 3, paragraph D, that the communication made by a legislator or legislative staff, which would otherwise be confidential and privileged under this section, shall not be deemed confidential and privileged to the extent that it's overheard basically in the meeting. It was my understanding that one of the services LSO did, which made it difficult currently, was to try and go through the recording and make sure that those types of things aren't violated. So in terms of policy change, to me, that's the biggest shift. If you get caught on tape at this point, then you're caught on tape. And the confidentiality that you had an expectation of with regard to your conversations with LSO are no longer valid under this legislation, as I understand it. And perhaps I'm not understanding, so I would ask the sponsors if perhaps I'm misinterpreting that change.
Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, no, you're not. In testimony, that was exactly what LSO was saying that would save them a lot of time. Right now, they are doing that. If somebody asks for a recording, they actually have to go through it, listen to it, make sure that extraneous conversations were not picked up because of that. And now with this particular legislation, the way it's written, you're exactly correct. Whatever's on the tape is going to be given out. They're not going to bother to go through it and listen to it. So be careful what you say in meeting, I guess.
Further discussion on the bill. Question on the bill. All those in favor of Senator Case's motion on the Committee of the Whole Rises report that do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 276, please say aye. Opposed, no. Bill has. Thank you. Division being called for. All those in favor, please stand. All those in favor, remain standing. All those opposed, please stand. Thank you. 17 in favor, 13 opposed. House Bill 276 is passed the Committee of the Whole. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 271. The reading clerk will read in the House Bill.
House Bill 271, engrossed, Game Bird Farms Greater Sage Grouse, sponsored by Representative Harshman, an act relating to game and fish, was referred to Committee Number 5, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Barnard, Emmerich, Hicks, Meyer, and Moniz. Senator Moniz, acting chair.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Hicks?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report that it do so with a recommendation that House Bill 271 do pass. For an explanation of this bill, I would ask that you call on President Bebout.
President Bebout.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the Senate, I bring you House Bill 271, Game Bird Farms Greater Sage Grouse, and ask that you favorably consider this bill. Mr. Chairman, I want to give a little brief overview and then go through the bill very quickly to explain, you know, the different parts of it. And what this bill really does, Mr. Chairman, it will allow certified private game bird farms to collect eggs, incubate, raise, and release native Wyoming sage grouse. This legislation does not seek any government funding, but simply puts in place authority and regulatory safeguards with our own Wyoming Game and Fish to ensure the safety and integrity of the sage grouse raised on private farms. You know, you're all very familiar with all the amount of time, energy, and resources. I think the number is $40 million now that we spend on the sage grouse conservation. And, you know, Wyoming, of course, has been leading that effort. We're the model act for all of the western states. And, of course, part of that is because the greater population of those sage grouse are within our state. This would complement the sage grouse management plan that is currently in place. You know, one of the things that we worry about, and we always worry about, whether they will be listed and all the money we spend and all the time involved, and then, of course, what happens. And what did happen is all the money and time we put involved, everybody loves our plan, then our own BLM comes out with a huge extra overlay of government bureaucracy to get in there and do way more than we need, and in my opinion, quite frankly, did not do any good for the birds, but really put an impetus on proper multiple use of lands. But this proposed legislation is a private sector effort to simply add another arrow to the quiver of helping the sage grouse. And I think we all understand the reason. What I will say, Mr. Chairman, is what this bill provides for is local sage grouse eggs to be harvested by certified wildlife biologists under the supervision of our own Wyoming Game and Fish Department. Specific qualifications for facilities to engage in the sage grouse population and production, biologically sound disease prevention and biosecurity practice, and then the native sage grouse raised in Wyoming were placed in Wyoming protecting generic purity. Mr. Chairman, if you look at the bill, and I'll go through it very quickly, it's a new act, and it relates to modifying game bird farms and certification of those. If you go to the, we're creating Wyoming 235111, game bird farm certification. And on page 2, you have to be licensed. And then the commission, our own commission, and refer to the commission of the bill as our own game and fish shall promulgate rules, regulations for the person to who would be receive these licenses. It's issued annually certificate to be in compliance with the act. If you go to page 3, requires experience. We have 2008 rules stated, started by the commission. This would build on that. Further on page 3, we talk about the facilities, the definition of them, what kind of food. We maintain the certification under the license on page 3. Mr. Chairman, we go to line page 4. We have to submit an annual National Poultry Improvement Plan certificate and annual avian influenza-free certification by licensed Wyoming veteran. I can't tell you what the MPIPC does for sure, but it was brought to us by, I believe, the Game and Fish. We report within the time period by rule the detection of any disease. All of this, Mr. Chairman, is to be sure and protect the bird and any kind of issues we might have with any disease. Before they're released from the pens, assuming that everything is going well and they gather the eggs, they have to, if you look at that, they have for at least 30 days immediately prior to the release, they have to have them in a holding pen. And any greater sage grouse that dies within the release holding pen during this period shall report to the department, again, to ensure safety on the disease size. Then you look at page 4. Any release of them will be within the lands of the state and within the boundary of the game bird, only in coordination with the department. Again, we got the department involved. Goes on to say a game bird licensing holding a current certification that may collect greater sage-grouse age. And that's really what it does, Mr. Chairman. It allows, with the Game and Fish overseeing it, for a private bird farm to go out there with a certified Wyoming conservationist biologist to go out there and collect these eggs. It's interesting to know, Mr. Chairman, we heard a testimony in there that it was kind of a moving number, but it was around 250,000 birds that are out there, and each one of them has about 10 eggs per season. So that's 2.5 million eggs, Mr. Chairman. And what this bill does, there's a standing committee amendment, and I'll get to that later, but the bill requires 250 of 2.5 million eggs, a very small number. And then he goes on to be very specific in how we collect those eggs and how many nests we disturb or do not disturb. On page 5, we talk about the number of licensed otter to collect eggs, the areas approved for collection. Again, being very protective, making sure we do it right. If you don't do it correctly, on the bottom of page 6, you may lose your license. And it talks about different things in that regard, Mr. Chairman, and how you would have to recertify to get your license back. On page 8, destruction of bird nests, you know, no person shall take or intentionally destroy the nest egg of any non-predaceous bird except as authorized in this, and this is the existing language where we amend it. The same thing on page 623.3.116, taking of privately game-owned birds, and we have a provision in there for the greater sage-grouse eggs. How the department issues licenses, that's on page 10. We investigate the applicant. That's on page 10 as well, 23.5.104. Then the rights of the licensee, we already have this lane language, and then we just have for bird species other than greater sage-grouse. Mr. Chairman, that is what the bill does. I'd be glad to answer questions, or we can deal with the standing committee amendment, and I would ask it to be read in at this time.
House Bill 271, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, to engrossed copy, corrected copy, page 5, line 1.
President Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I would move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 271. And what this does, members of the Senate, it takes the number of eggs from 250 to 1,000. And when we were listening to the testimony, and I was in the Agriculture Committee, and we had the Game and Fish Director talking about the overabundance of eggs that are out there every year, it made sense. If you're really going to give this private sector opportunity to really succeed, then why not collect 1,000 eggs instead of 250? That's the purpose of the amendment. It just gives it a better opportunity to make it work. In fact, Mr. Chairman, what you do, if you only collect 250, you might have to go out there several times to get the number of eggs to really get the process to work. If you have 1,000, you might be able to do it in one time. So I think it's a good amendment. I'd be glad to answer any questions on the Standing Committee Amendment.
Questions on the Standing Committee Amendment. Senator Burns.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, my information is about 4 years old, at least, maybe five. But the last I heard, one of the big problems with sage-grouse and one of the problems we're having with the survival of them and the threat of them being listed is that they're a very primitive bird. And as of 4 or 5 years ago, they had never successfully been raised domestically. They cannot be captively raised. So I'm trying to figure out exactly what this bill does. Do they take the eggs and then put them somewhere on somebody's ranch? They hatch, and then without the hen there to take care of them, do they supposedly raise by themselves? I'm trying to figure out how this works, and the only thing that really bothers me about that is that somebody who's licensed is licensed to buy, among other things, buy and sell eggs. So they may make money, but the results, from my understanding, could be catastrophic for those birds. If this is an experiment, that's fine to see if we can do it. As a matter of fact, I wish somebody would develop a method to raise them in captivity that would take care of the problem we would have having them listed. So I was wondering if I could get some more clarity on that.
Further discussion. Senator Ruffus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a couple of questions. The first one is, I don't understand the business model of a commercial enterprise that's going to be collecting eggs. and exactly how they're commercially going to make revenue off of that. So if there could be more explanation for how this business...
Point of order.
We have a point of order.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, are we in the amendment?
We are still in the amendment.
Correct. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Ruffus.
Mr. Chairman, it's relevant to understanding how this works as to why we need 1,000 of them versus 250, how it's going to be bred. And it actually gets to my second question, which is if theoretically we've got a business model where we're trying to cultivate, we've got 250 or 1,000, but we're going to breed these and try and go down that path as the model, why do I need to start with 1,000 if they typically have 10 eggs each? It seems to me that my exponential math is going to get me as many of them as I can possibly want in a relatively short period of time, regardless of what that starting number is. So if I can understand how this is going to work better and why it's critical for us to immediately start with 1,000 as opposed to the 250, that would help to inform my decision. Thank you.
For the questions on the amendment, Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, can I ask, we have the amendment divided. Division 1 would be lines 1 through 4, and I understand those are just cleanup, and Division 2 would be lines 5 and 6, which deals with the question of how many eggs.
Chair rules, that is divisible. Take the first division first, lines 1 through 4. Senator Bebout.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, my colleague from Beach Creek is correct. That's cleanup, and I would ask the body to vote aye.
Question.
Question on the first division of the Standing Committee Amendment 1 to House Bill 271. All those in favor of the first division, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. First division passes. On to the second division. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, and let me say at the outset, this is a bill that I want to support, that I fully intend to support, but I do have some reservations here. It strikes me that it makes more sense to start out with a relatively smaller number, which is what the bill as it's before us gives us, 250, and then... if you make some mistakes, as Mr. Chairman, you're fairly likely to the first time as you're learning how to do things, you haven't done as much harm, because you will, and it'll be more to get 250 eggs. It won't be 25 nests they disturb. It'll be a lot more, because there is quite a variation. It may go up to 10, but they don't always do that many. I see lots of broods that are a lot smaller than that. Now, there's some losses there, too. But I think you want to minimize the disturbance to the wild birds. And I think a gradual start, such as the bill as it comes to us provides, is a better idea than going to these larger numbers right away, Mr. Chairman. So I'm going to urge us to defeat this part of the Standing Committee Amendment.
The discussion on Division 2. Senator Kinski.
On and for Division 2 of the amendment, Mr. Chairman, we've been through this near listing of the sage grouse, and now we've got some folks that want to risk their money and their time to try and breed it in captivity, something that evidently has been done with only mixed success. And we're not talking about 1,000 eggs definitely. Again, the bill says no more than, and how many exactly is up to the authorities and the commission to determine based on science and need and such. I'd say full speed ahead, let's let them take up to 1,000 subject to the commission's oversight, and if we can solve this issue with the sage grouse and somebody can do it with private sector money, let's give it a shot. Thank you.
Further discussion on Division 2. Senator Nethercott.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and against the amendment, I have received just significant feedback overnight concerning this issue from veterinarians, wildlife folks, with their main concern being the 1,000 eggs. And they've told me this is only going to result in a lot of scrambled eggs. I know. It's what they say. It's what they say. I know. So I do have concern about the incredible volume that's been increased in this amendment. Clearly, the originators of this bill felt 250 was appropriate, and I think it likely is. And in all things, as we've seen today, reasonable moderation and restrictions is appropriate. And so let's move forward as intended, as the creators of the bill and this business had originally intended, with 250, and use our common sense and reasonable prudence and move forward accordingly. I stand against the amendment.
Further discussion on the second division. Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and against the second division, I am like the senator from Bates Creek. I am in support of this bill, but the Second Amendment changes it quite a bit. One of the issues is if this is a viable business model and you can do an offset to conservation, that kind of stuff, and actually make some money on this deal, I refer you to double I on page 5, line 16. No more than 250 eggs may be collected by any game bird farm licensee in any calendar year. Now, we have a lot of those in this state, and if it becomes viable to do a business, every one of them is going to be running out there for 250 eggs or 1,000. And I would submit to you, it'd be better to make it 250 eggs than the 1,000 that all the game bird licensees could run out and pick up. So on and against Division 2.
Further discussion on the second division. Let's go, Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, we had some good discussion in committee about these birds being indeterminate layers. And what that basically means is that you can take the eggs out of the nest, and when you take them out of the nest, the birds will lay more eggs. And so, and it has to do with the timing about when you take them out. And the game and fish know how that works. The biologist knows how that works. So you can take them out, and they'll go ahead and replenish those eggs. Now, the reason that we want to try to get to 1,000 in this is it's an economies of scale. And these folks don't want to go out for years and years and years and continue to collect eggs. What they want to be able to do is get enough hens out there in their own operation to where they never go back out and disturb any more nests. And they can do that. And the incubators that they have can incubate up to 20,000 eggs. And so it's really economy of scale from the standpoint of the folks that are in the business. And so what they want to do is have their own hens and be able to go out and collect and harvest their own eggs. And 1,000 gets them to that point a lot quicker and gets them out of the situation where they're going out there. Now, if there's a concern that this is going to explode and you're going to have, you know, multiple people going out there and disturbing egg sites, well, first of all, the Game and Fish has total control over that. They have total control about how many eggs that can be harvested. But if you're really, really concerned about it, then put a sunset on the number of years that you can collect eggs. Put a 4-year sunset on it. And so you find out how it works, and then if you want to expand it later, you can. Let's look at it from the standpoint that you've got an operation, it's of a certain size, and there's economies of scale, and the quicker they get up there to where they have their own nesting hens and are collecting those eggs there, the quicker that the concerns that you have are alleviated.
For the discussion on Division 2, Senator Ruffus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've heard two statements that indicates that the commission can scale back from that 1,000. I don't understand where that is in statute, that there's any ability for the commission. I see that the amendment would go on page 5 under the E paragraph, which indicates that these are maximum limits once they have the license. Looking at the exception language afterwards, other than a full suspension of the program, I'm not entirely sure I understand how it can be scaled back from whatever the limit is. So if I could get more clarification on that, I'd appreciate it.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, to answer that last question, I'd direct your attention to page 6, line 15, and then subsection D. Under that provision, it says other limitations on egg collection, including the complete suspension. And that's the provision in there that gives the department for a whole range of issues that may potentially, so the nature of sage-grouse populations, are they wildly fluctuates. We see them, and they're very cyclic in nature. They tend to build up over about a 7 to 10 year cycle, and then we typically have a tough winter, or probably even worse, as drought conditions, and we see the populations wildly vacillate. So within that component, at any time, if we get to the point where the department makes a determination that the collection of these eggs could potentially jeopardize a candidate listing or any other listing, that they can completely put a suspension on any eggs collection. So that's the answer for the good senator from Albany County, that they have the authority to completely suspend that. I wanted to answer the good senator from Senator Burns' this question, and quite frankly, the technology has regarding captive breeding. Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to save that because that's not necessarily on the amendment, but I'll get back to you on that, Senator Burns.
Second division still, Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, on and against the second division again, it is true that the sage grouse will rebreed and will start another nest and lay more eggs if the first nest is disrupted. Typically in the wild, that's done either fails either due to predators or weather. However, the bill at the top of page 6 says that eggs may be collected only in April and May. Mr. Chairman, my experience, and I do go out and count a sage grouse lek three times every April as per the Game and Fish protocol for this sort of voluntary activity. We've got a lot of sage grouse in our place and have a fair amount of experience with them. The strut will fade out sometime in early to mid-May. So you're having, I think that this bill would allow egg collection after the time that you're likely to get another clutch laid. So that's a concern. I think that's a reason to keep the numbers down. But I think the more important reason, what I think we're really after here, and I wish that the bill said so directly, but I think what we're really after here is to establish a captive breeding population, where it's, I forget who it was said that the some of the proponents of this hope that they'll get to the point where they never have to go out and collect any more eggs. With that objective, I think the smaller number that was in the bill as it comes to us from the House, the 250, should be perfectly adequate. And I think the 1,000, Mr. Chairman, is more than will be needed to achieve the objective. And second, this is open to more than one outfit doing it. And what I am afraid is that if we allow too large a collection, it will become a profitable business. Go out, collect eggs, raise the chicks, release the birds into particular locations for very wealthy hunters to come hunt sage grouse there. And I think that's something we do not want. That's the purpose of this, is to get a captive population so that we have a source of birds that, frankly, Mr. Chairman, we can reintroduce into areas where they've been extirpated, that is a protection against a listing. And I don't think we want to encourage a commercial farming operation that doesn't have a captive breeding population. So for those reasons, I think the 250 that's in the bill as it comes to us is perfectly adequate, and we should defeat this division of the Standing Committee Amendment.
Further discussion on the second division. President Bebout.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good comments by all. I'll try to go through all of them. The first one is, we didn't think about scrambled eggs. I guess we could have got into that. But about the volumes, what we should have said maybe on page 5, on line 16, we should have said no more than 0.00004 instead of 0.0001 may be collected in any year. My point, members of the Senate, is there's 2.5 million eggs laid every year. That was the number that was given to the committee. And now we're talking about 250 versus 1,000. So the number is not a magnitude of 250 a 1,000, assuming there's only 5,000 available. It's a magnitude of 250 a 1,000. There's 2.5 million available. Another point that I think is pretty important when you look at it, and I don't know about the dates, and I can't answer whether that's the best dates or not. I do know that they go ahead and they move and they breed again and they nest. And one of the concerns we had, if you had the 250 and you went out there, you might go to a certain area, and it's limited to 40 nest sites. Well, maybe you would be better off to go to different nest sites and collect the 1,000 instead of going to 140 nest site area. I thought that made more sense to be able to do it. The other thing is a business model. And if you're going to have a business model and you're out collecting them in the incubator side of it, and we heard testimony in the committee from somebody that knows a lot more about this than I do, he raises, I believe, chuckers, pheasants, possibly huns, and maybe some quail. The way he explained it to me is, you know, you go out there one time, you do it properly, you do it based on rules and regulations, up to 1,000, it really helps you. And it is a captive breeding situation. That's where you ultimately want to be, is to have a captive breeding situation. But members of the Senate, I just think as a businessman, it makes more sense to me when you're talking about such a minimal number of eggs relative to those that are out there, you're disturbing less area when you go out to do it in terms of where they're sitting. And as far as the licensee side of it, you know, the Game and Fish will have these rules that they will promulgate. I don't see 100 people coming in to do this. I think one is going to step very lightly. It's private sector driven. Let's see what happens. I would hope that you would support the Standing Committee Amendment, second part of it.
Question being called on the Division 2 of the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 271. All those in favor of the second division, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Second division being called. All those in favor, please stand. All those opposed, please stand. Division 2 has failed the Rooney the Hole. Vote was 15-15. All right. Back on. Oh, we still have to vote on the amendment. Sorry. Oh, yeah, the First Amendment. Okay. First Division. Back on the bill. Further discussion on the bill. Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, just to answer some of the questions, and primarily for the senator from Sheridan County about the ability. In fact, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the Colorado Division of Wildlife have successfully pen-raised sage grouse. They actually have developed captive breeding populations. They actually domesticate fairly easily compared to some other species. The limitation, and this is what I think this bill speaks to, the biggest limitation to raising sage grouse in captivity is lots of money. And the conclusion was from some of the work done in Colorado, a lot done with Gunnison, which sage grouse, which is a subspecies that is on the endangered species list, that it's incredibly expensive. You have to feed them sagebrush for months and months all winter long. That's their diet. So, and that's why I think at least in an initial step here, getting back to the issue from the senator from Natrona County, you're not going to have people coming out here, flocking out here to do this. If we're worried about that, then you put a one-time cap on the collections, and if they fail, they don't get to come back. But the simple fact is You're not going to see a lot of people doing that. Just getting the facility set up, you're talking lots of acres with sagebrush. You're talking highly intensive for your captive breeding population on what it requires to feed those. I don't see this as going to be something that you're going to see. We're going to see every bird farm, every person that has a bird farm license in Wyoming run out to do. Quite frankly, the capital expenditures is so significant to even attempt this endeavor. Let the private sector go out and spend a bunch of money and see if it's even feasible to develop a large captive breeding population.
For discussion on the bill, Senator Rothfuss.
Mr. Chairman, I have two questions about the bill. The first is, is there any strong evidence about the reintroduction being successful? So, based on the testimony from my good friend from Carbon County, it sounds like there are some challenges associated with that, and I'm curious whether there's any data or evidence indicating that if you were to have a domesticated population and have this captive breeding program, if you were simply able to take the grouse back out and reintroduce it, and if it would be perfectly happy living its life out in the countryside as opposed to in the captive breeding program. So if there's any data on that, I'd appreciate it. The other is with regard to the captive breeding, which seems to be the theme here, that is an essential part of this. Is there a requirement in the legislation that captive breeding actually occur as the focus, or can I simply go out every year and get 250 new eggs and only do an incubation program and not even attempt captive breeding? So I'm curious if I can just have an ongoing, for the next 15 or 20 years, 250 a year.
Further discussions on the bill. Senator Case.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I am kind of concerned about this bill. I've gotten quite a few emails on it from wildlife professionals, from credible folks who have come to visit with me. And, Mr. Chairman, no one thinks this is a good idea. Until today, I didn't get a single email in support of it, and now I have two. One that corrected the bill number from the first one. They're both from the same person. That is the only email I've gotten a communication in support of it. I'm really kind of worried about this, and I don't know much about, I understand there's a lot of eggs out there. I get that part. But, Mr. Chairman, I know that this is kind of a fragile species, and I know they get upset pretty darn easy, and that wind towers, for example, are terrible. You guys should tax those things, and then we wouldn't have that. But, Mr. Chairman, these are very easily disturbed, and we know that the real problem in Wyoming is not a lack of birds. And we have places to have the birds. It's a habitat problem, Mr. Chairman. And if we could get the Slim Jim controversy settled out here in front of me, we could work it out. But it is a situation where there's not enough habitat. And that's the problem. If we had more habitat, we could have more birds. And that concerns me. So this act of retrieving eggs, it disturbs a lot of birds. It's like a predator coming in and raiding the nest, Mr. Chairman. And this notion that they're going to relay clutches, well, I guarantee you that's possible, Mr. Chairman. But the thing is, resources are scarce, and it's a very competitive world for those birds to put on enough weight, get enough calcium to make the eggs, to breed, to all these what-ifs. And you can kind of stir them up by bothering the nest. I don't know how you're going to do otherwise. They're going to be PO'd, I would imagine, is what I would be. And they might try to breed again, and that's great. But you're going to disturb a lot more than 0.000 on the eggs by running around collecting them. That bothers me. The other thing that bothers me when there's a statement that says, these birds domesticate relatively easily. I'm worried about that. Have you ever fished and had... There's a difference between fish that were raised in the wild and fish that are introduced. There's a difference in pheasants that overwinter and pheasants that are introduced. They're different things, Mr. Chairman, and I'm worried that genetically you get birds. Have you ever raised birds, anybody? I've had chickens and ducks. One time I had chickens and ducks, and they thought each one thought the other one was the other one, They're so goofy. They get imprinted on anything, and they will follow. They would follow my kid, my son George, around all the time. They wouldn't leave his side. They just imprinted right there. They thought he was a head chicken duck, whatever that was. But it's really kind of sensitive and complicated. And I'm afraid that you could have these easily domesticated animals put back into the wild, and they will change the entire structure of the species. And that scares me, Mr. Chair. I don't think we really have the right to do that. And to tell you the truth, no one has asked me to support this bill, except for one person.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, on and for the bill, let's be plain here. This is an issue that has quite a bit of impact on the state of Wyoming. And I think it's one we have to look at and look beyond just the email file as to how you judge it. This is a major potential protection for all the industries, including oil and gas, including agriculture, that use the public lands and have reason to be afraid of a potential federal listing. And, Mr. Chairman, it is a major protection for those of us who really want to see the species preserved as part of our heritage. Two ways. It gives us a backup if things go wrong. It gives us the ability to raise a population that can be reintroduced in areas where the birds have been extirpated for one reason or another. And the protection against the federal listing is important for those that value the birds, because the feds so far have shown an inclination, and the research has been concentrated, Mr. Chairman, on what goes on in Idaho, which is very different from Wyoming, and some of the prescriptions. In Idaho, you're very concerned about fire burning up the habitat. In Wyoming, you need that, because the sage-grouse does better where you have a mixed habitat, where you have some stands that are younger and more nutritious for the grouse in the wintertime. It does better with a younger stand. The feds could well forbid the use of fire and do considerable harm to our sage-grouse population. So the bill is very much needed. I do, Mr. Chairman, however, have some concerns yet, and I want to make some suggestions and see what kind of reaction we get in Committee of the Whole. I think we need a statement in here that our objective is to establish a breeding population in captivity that can be used as a source of birds for reintroduction. I think that's important. I think there may need to be some kind of time limitation. If you try it for a certain period of time, get a certain number of eggs, and it should be pretty liberal, but then give the Game and Fish Authority to say enough is enough. That operation doesn't know what they're doing, and they failed. And they're done. Set a clear objective, Mr. Chairman, and if they don't meet it after a reasonable time, give the Game and Fish some authority to be sensible. If you have some kind of, you know, natural disaster and you have a learning curve, and it still looks promising, we ought to be able to go ahead. But put some sideboards on that. I think some of those things, Mr. Chairman, would make this a significantly better bill. So, Mr. Chairman, for those reasons, I think we ought to pass the bill, go forward with it. I will respond to one thing. It was a question about successful reintroductions. You have to be careful here. You have to put enough birds out, because you've got to assume that the captive birds are not going to be as wary as they should be when they're turned loose. I've seen this with pheasants. They aren't as wary, there will be a higher mortality to predators, and the principal predator is the golden eagle, but there's lots of others. So you have to have more of them out there, and you have to do it properly. It's not sage grouse, but with the Atwater's prairie chicken, which endangered, they reduced some captive birds that turned out to have acquired a domestic virus in captivity and wiped out a wild population. So you do have to be careful, and this bill has some precautions in it to deal with that. So I think the sideboards are there for that. So, Mr. Chairman, I would urge us to take it forward to second reading, amend it a bit further, and then ultimately, I think, Mr. Chairman, we ought to pass it.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, just to answer some of the questions about reintroductions and some of the experimental stuff, when they did the reintroductions with captive-raised birds in Colorado, when they released adult birds, they found that they had a very, very high mortality rate. That's consistent with a lot of things. They did have some their highest level of success is when they would actually graft chicks onto existing hens that had chicks, because that hen then teaches the chicks how to avoid predators and where to forage and all those types. So it's a mixed bag, but I would tell you that we have this thing called ringneck pheasants here in the state of Wyoming that aren't native. There are species from Asia that were introduced originally through bird farms by the Wyoming Game and Fish Department in the state. We've got chukar partridge and Hungarian partridge that also have been brought in and raised in bird farms. In fact, our department today raises pheasants every year, takes them down to a place called Springer, and over here at another place at Glendale, and allows hunting of those. Some of those escape and actually establish wild populations. It's very small, but that's how we've got pheasants in this state today, is because of those reintroductions. And then for my colleague down in Fremont County, it's concerns with releasing captive-raised animals. So we got this little thing in Wyoming called a black-footed ferret that's now being reintroduced all over the western United States, and guess what? Every single population from North Dakota, South Dakota, Colorado, and Wyoming has come from captive-raised populations that's done by our own Wyoming Game and Fish Department. We've got another little species out there that's coming back from the brink of extinction called the Colorado River Condor, or the Colorado Condor, one of the most endangered species in the United States, that through a captive breeding program, we're reestablishing populations all over. So I understand there's some inherent risk from doing this, and I think the tall senator from Natrona County is right on. Put some more sideboards on this, folks. That's probably what we need to do, but I certainly think that if we have some individual or some entities that are willing to invest literally significant amounts of capital to try this, with the appropriate sideboards, is probably not a bad thing.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and for this bill, it's a good idea for us to get into this. We need these sage grouse in Wyoming, and I hope that there are game bird farm licensees that can make that investment. I think there's quite a few of them that are corporate that can make the investment to do this. And given that there is a business model for offsets and conservation, that kind of stuff, I think there might be some more investors. So I hope we're successful and we have multiple investors. On and for the bill.
Senator Anselmi Dalton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and against the bill. I have great concerns about this. I'm all for the sage grouse, of course, but these birds, though will be raised in captivity, will lack a place-based survival skill set, and so that's a concern that's inherent to this species. In addition, the Wyoming sage grouse are not endangered or listed, and this bill basically allows private ownership of a native Wyoming bird, and that's never been done before, and there are significant concerns from the conservationists that I've heard from about this. In addition, No one has discussed the fact that there could be, we could introduce non-native diseases to these birds, which would be a big concern of mine. If we wipe out our sage grouse population by introducing some non-native disease, then that's even worse. It's very costly. Our neighbor to the south did a study of trying to raise sage grouse in captivity, and basically said it, the captive breeding programs are controversial and very, very expensive. And if this is just for a benefit of some private individuals, we already have a study going on with through the state, why are we doing this right now? Why do we wait and not endanger our beautiful sage grouse? Thank you.
Senator Kinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would ask folks to reflect on the fact of how narrow an escape we had from this whole state being shut down. That near listing of the sage grouse, had it been listed, would have shut down energy development, mineral development, agriculture, as we went into lawsuit after lawsuit after lawsuit as to what is the critical habitat and whether or not the entire state of Wyoming constitutes the greater sage grouse habitat area. If we can breed them in captivity, I'd like to see a minimum number of sideboards put on them, because I'm afraid we may impair whatever business model it is. If we start restricting it, we may in fact scare people off who can do this. I remember during the sage-grouse debates, I said, why don't we just breed them like the black-footed ferret? They said, well, they're a primitive species. They can't be bred in captivity. And now I feel like, hallelujah. If they can be bred in captivity and somebody's willing to risk their money, let's do it. Because, you know, the Environmental Endangered Species Act is still the law of the land. It's not going to be repealed or rolled back. It might be reformed, but we are still fighting the sage-grouse listing battle. It is not done, folks, by any stretch of the imagination. And everybody who derives any portion of their livelihood, whether from directly or indirectly, from energy or agriculture, should be in favor of this bill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, reference was made to our favorite Wyoming critter, the black-footed ferret, and I'm so happy that we have black-footed ferrets and we've had a successful program in that. But I would point out that that's not the model that you're looking at. The reason the black-footed ferrets were moved to a captive breeding program is because the species was almost wiped out by distemper. And there was down to 18 individuals. And it was a desperate attempt to save a species. And it was the last possible thing that could possibly be done. And it seems to have worked. But all the genetics of all the ferrets are back to those 18 individuals. They are trying to introduce other genetic from tissues that came from other places is kind of incredible what they're thinking about. But that's it. It was a last desperate attempt. I don't know about the Colorado condor. I'm not familiar with that. But I am familiar with the California condor. And that has been a very difficult situation. It's down to just a handful of individuals. And I don't know where that is and captive breeding program, et cetera. But my point is it's a last desperate effort to revive a species when there's nothing else you can do. We're not at that point here. But it was mentioned about that this is still a fragile species. We're under scrutiny from our federal partners with respect to maintaining habitat and protecting this bird. If I was a federal partner, I would be very concerned about this program and worry that this could harm the species down the road and show that Wyoming is not a great partner with respect to potential listing of species. And I know we've been fighting on wolves forever, and I truly like Wyoming's plan. I think we've been hurt by the feds throughout on the wolf situation and the grizzly bears as well. But I think we have to respect what our federal partners would think about this, Mr. Chairman, and I just don't think that this is the answer. It's a very dangerous idea in my mind, and I'm just telling you, plenty of knowledgeable biologists. I've had all these letters and emails and visiting with me in person. They say this is a bad idea.
President Bebout.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. My colleague from Fremont County was wondering if anybody should tell him it's a good idea. I'll tell him it's a good idea because it is a good idea. You know, a couple of things, ladies and gentlemen. You know, let's keep an eye on what we're talking about here. It sounds like it's the end of the world. If we do this thing, all of a sudden the sage grouse are going to be gone from our state. This is not what's going on at all. There's 250 to 500,000 of these animals, of these birds. We hunt them every year. There's 6,000 to 8,000 to 10,000 that are harvested every year. I'll share an example of my own personal affiliation with these. I've always hunted these years and years ago. We would go out to the Gas Hills, and when the Gas Hills went up and running, there was uranium activity, they were mining, there were drilling rigs going on, there was water. You could find lots of sage chickens. We used to shoot them all the time. In fact, my father would tell me, well, don't shoot that one, it's an old one, shoot the young one. There were birds everywhere. We shut down the uranium industry, there's no water, all of a sudden there's no birds out there. The uranium industry tries to come back, once again we have birds. The uranium industry gets shut down again, there's no birds. You know, if you really buy into this idea of the Endangered Species, look at the success of the Endangered Species Act. How many endangered species are there in America today? Over 1,000. Can you name them all? Can you name 5 or 10? Well, we can name bears. We can name wolves, two terrible ideas that the government's shut down our throats. There's others, but the success ratio is 1 to 2%. And they're trying to shove this down our throat that the sage grouse should be endangered species. It's not endangered. We hunt them. They're all over the place. And now we're trying to come up with a viable plan that says if, in fact, the feds get out of control again on an Endangered Species Act that should be reformed and says, list them, let's look at an alternative to have another quiver in our, in another arrow in our quiver to be able to have them in captivity and use them for that purpose and do it. It's a good idea. It's private sector. Someone talked about all the money it's going to cost. There's no money out of your pocket. There's no money out of the state's pocket. The game fish will have to promulgate the rules. That's what they do. We pay them. We fund them to do that. It's a private sector-driven thing. If it doesn't work, it'll be over. Vote for the bill, please.
Thank you. Question being called. Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And to me, you know, it's, and I would agree with our colleague over there from Riverton. It's not saying it's the end of the world, the world's going to end if we do this, but to me it's the precedence being set. A precedence being set that has never been done before. We have a legacy in Wyoming of not allowing our wildlife to be privatized. Our native Wyoming wildlife is not being privatized. One of the catchphrases, you know, and you hear different ones over the years, in these chambers, and one of about getting that camel getting his nose under the tent was a good one a few years ago. So you start with this camel getting his nose under the tent here, you know, privatizing Wyoming's wildlife and allowing businesses to turn it into profit. You know, these animals or these birds belong to the people of Wyoming. The wildlife belongs to the people of Wyoming, and should privatization be allowed for sage grouse, then what's next? You know, there's a lot of states that have around us that have some type of game farming, and I can guarantee you that sportsmen have lost licenses in states in around this surrounding us. The state just to the west of us have lost 30,000 deer licenses in working towards these kind of things. We have to the south of us some game farms, and then you have issues of we have burbot in the Green River, we have different issues with different, you know, we have lake trout in Yellowstone Lake, and you know, our native species here and our wildlife are priceless and belong to the people. On and against the bill.
Mr. Chairman, just one small correction. The camel is in the tent. We have game farm in Wyoming. It's been here since 1970s. It's an elk farm. It's here. It's been here since the 70s. It's legal. And so there is a camel in the tent in Wyoming. For
Sen-
the bill.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, let me say, I think the privatization here is largely a red herring. These things, on a year-round basis, are going to be expensive enough to raise because of their dietary requirements and because of the difficulty of breeding, captive breeding, elect breeding bird. The only place I fear the privatization, Mr. Chairman, is if we threw it so wide open that somebody could come in, collect enough eggs to rear chicks and turn them out for hunting that same season. That would be a mistake. And, Mr. Chairman, that's not where this bill's going. And this is the time to do it, when we've got still got plenty of birds and we can afford to do some experiments. Mr. Chairman, I do have one further question for the experts, and that is, I don't see anything in the bill that allows the prospective game farm to capture and use some adult or sub-adult wild birds, which might, I think, increase their success, their chances of success, and I wonder if there's some reason why that provision isn't in the bill and whether we should add it.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, just for a little more edification for the body on this issue before we take the vote, not only are we going to look at trying to do this, our neighbor to the north up in Canada has some residual sage grouse populations, and right now in the province of Alberta and the Alberta Zoo is trying to develop a captive breeding population because they don't hardly have any sage grouse yet. Not a novel concept. But let's talk about the red herring with privatization. Right now, I can go get a bait permit from the Wyoming Game and Fish Department to capture in a trap minnows to sell at my bait shop to be able to use. So I guess if we're really worried about privatization of the state's wildlife, we ought to get rid of that permit system too. So, you know, I think that's I agree with my senator from Natrona County. It's a little bit of a red herring in this case. We already do this with some fish species within the state of Wyoming.
Ready for the question?
Okay.
We were doing so well, too. All right, all those in favor of, who was it? Senator Hicks. Hicks, thank you. All those in favor of Senator Hicks's motion that when the Committee on the Rising Report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 271, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The ayes have it. That House Bill 271 has passed the Committee of the Whole. I'm looking at the majority floor leader. Oh, he's not getting up. Okay. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 88. Read the House bill.
House Bill 88, Background Checks, Enterprise Technology Services, sponsored by Representative Pownall. An act relating to the Department of Enterprise Technology Services was referred to Committee Number 1, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Anselmi Dalton, Christensen, Hicks, Kinski, and Nethercott. Senator Christensen, Chair.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Christensen.
Mr. Chairman, let me get my glasses on here. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 88, Background Checks to Enterprise Technology Services, and to present the bill will be Senator Von Flatiron.
Senator Von Flatiron, Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is not a follow bill, so we should do it in a few minutes. I'll try not to follow you up. So this has to do with enterprise technology services and getting background checks, criminal background checks in particular, giving them permission to do that. As you know, everybody in enterprise technology services is the ones that look at the computers of other agencies. They do this. They work on the servers. But yet, these are one of the only agencies that are not allowed to get background checks on future employees or their own employees as they are today.
And so this bill allows them to create, or creates the statute that allows them to get criminal background check, history check on their employees or their prospective employees. So if you go to page 2, under 719-106, a double X, V, double I, the Department of Enterprise Technology Services, for purposes of obtaining background information on prospective and current employees. If you go to 179201 in the statutes, it lists everybody, every agency, including employees of substitute care providers, state institutions. So what we're doing under 179201 is giving them the permission to apply for background checks and to verify that the prospective employee or their employee is clean as far as the background checks and won't affect their work. They are the ones that actually go and look at everybody else's computer, but amazingly, they never were allowed to do criminal background checks. So that's all this bill does, and I stand for questions on it.
Question. Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Christensen's motion, but when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 88, say aye. Opposed, no. House Bill 88 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 222. The reading clerk will read in the House bill.
House Bill 222, engrossed. Background checks, access to federal tax information. Sponsored by Representative Nicholas. An act relating to criminal background checks. Was referred to Committee Number 7, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Agar, Case, Nethercott, and Scott. Excused, Senator Pappas, Senator Case, Chair.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Case?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole arises to report it, do so with a do pass recommendation on House Bill 222, Background Checks, Access to Federal Tax Information. Mr. Chairman, I think that Senator Scott is going to prepare this.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, this bill comes to us courtesy of the Department of Family Services. The feds passed a new regulation last April, I believe it was, that if you're going to be dealing with getting income tax information from the federal government, you have to have one of these background checks. Department of Family Services does this in particularly the child enforcement effort, Mr. Chairman, where they intercept tax refunds. And frankly, that program has achieved the best results in the country. We are getting child support now in 68% of the cases, which I understand is top in the country. But they, to continue doing what they're doing, they need to have this background check. It also affects some of the work that the benefits people do there. And it's written more generally because their thought was, the feds got us this time. If they require it elsewhere, we ought to have the statutory authorization. You need the statutory authorization before you can get the background check done. So this provides that. It's Mr. Chairman, it's a good little bill. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Casey's motion on the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 222, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. House Bill 222 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 241. The reading clerk will read in the House bill.
House Bill 241, Background Checks, Interstate Compacts, sponsored by Representative Barlow, an act relating to criminal history records. Was referred to Committee Number 10, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Baldwin, Boner, Bouchard, Peterson, and Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Scott?
Mr. Chairman, I move in the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so with a recommendation that House Bill 241 do pass. There was a standing committee amendment. I ask it be read in at this time.
House Bill 241, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 3, line 1.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I move adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. Mr. Chairman, what the Standing Committee amendment does is give us an immediate effective date in place of the standard effective date. Mr. Chairman, that turns out to be important because the physician licensure interstate compact is within a day or two, we were told, of going into effect, and they need this authorization right now. So that's important that we have an immediate effective date. Mr. Chairman, I would stand for any questions on the Standing Committee Amendment.
Question. Question being called on the Standing Committee Amendment. All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment, number one, to House Bill 241, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That amendment carries.
Mr. Chairman.
Back on the bill, Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I yield to Senator Baldwin for an explanation of this good little House bill.
Senator Baldwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let me give you some background on this bill. That was a joke. Come on.
Is your mic on?
Probably.
It maybe, is.
Maybe better if you shut it off, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Senator.
Really straightforward bill for a final bill of the day. Goes along with the last two bills as far as background checks. We found that when we did the compact bills, the physician, nurse, the advanced practice nurse, and the most recently the EMT or EMS compact bill, that they lacked one thing, according to staff, and that was the ability of these compacts licensure boards to obtain an FBI background criminal check. And what this bill does, quite straightforward, it gives them the ability to perform that background check. And as the good senator, tall senator, Natrona County senator, with a great, getting somewhat worse haircut, it's grown back a little bit. I got a laugh out of that one. The physician compact is ready to go forward right now. This is the only piece that's lacking, and they will move forward as soon as they have this. So I would encourage the body support of this bill.
Questions? Question being called.
Your amendment's done.
Was that? Yeah, we already passed the amendment, yeah. All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with the favorable recommendation of House Bill 241, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. House Bill 241 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we rise and report, please.
You've all heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carries.
Mike, we're a president's AOL. Yeah,
it's a race, and they're off.
So what are you ready to read?
Read the Committee of the Whole report, please.
Mr. President, your Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, begs leave to report as follows. House Bill 20, engrossed, do pass. House Bill 114, engrossed, do pass. House Bill 136, engrossed, failed to pass Committee of the Whole and was indefinitely postponed. House Bill 137, engrossed, do pass. House Bill 194, engrossed, do pass amended. House Bill 161, do pass. House Bill 116, engrossed, do pass. House Bill 182, engrossed, do pass amended. House Bill 276, engrossed, do pass. House Bill 271, engrossed, do pass amended. House Bill 88, do pass. House Bill 222, engrossed, do pass. House Bill 241, do pass amended. Senator Peterson, Chair.
Senator Peterson.
Mr. President, I move for the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You have heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carried and the report has been adopted.
Senator Christensen.
Mr. President, without objection, I'd ask that House Bill 230, hemp farming, be re-referred from Judiciary Number 1 to Committee Number 8.
Without objection, House Bill 230 has been referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation. A couple of joint conference committees. Senate files 62 telepharmacy amendments. Chairman, Senator Baldwin. Senator Bouchard. Senator Hastert. Senate file 14, inoperative liquor licenses. Senator Emmerich. Chairman. Senator Bernard. Senator Wasserberger. What kind of look? It's been a long day, members of the Senate. You didn't see the look that I just got from my colleague from Campbell County. So noted. Do we have committee reports, standing committee reports, or messages from the House? Standing committee reports. Here you go.
February 23, 2017, Mr. President, your committee number 7, to whom was referred House Bill 77, In-State Tuition AmeriCorps Service, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Agar, Case, Nethercott, Pappas, and Scott. Senator Case, Chairman. Mr. President, your committee number 1, to whom was referred House Bill 197, Engrossed, Marijuana and THC Products Policy Reform Act, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Anselmi Dalton, Christensen, Hicks, Kinski, and Nethercott. Senator Christensen, Chair.
Senator Von Fladen, are you ready for the Joint Conference Committee report on Senate File 6? Will the reading clerk please read in that Joint Conference Committee report?
Joint Conference Committee Number 2 report, Senate File 6, Radioactive Waste Storage Facilities Amendments. Signed by Representatives Greer, Burkhart, and Piperinen, Senators Von Fladen, Coe, and Scott.
Mr. Vice President.
Mr. President, I move Conference Committee Report Number 346 to Senate File 6 and ask for an aye vote. What we did on this, if you remember, this is the second conference. The first conference we went over there, and you go to page 5 of the bill, and it says the director shall hold public hearings, and they amended it to throughout the state, to receive comments on the report. I myself didn't think that was too bad until the good tall senator from Natrona County pointed out the fact that they forgot to amend to the extent practicable. And so that was still struck. So the director shall hold public hearings throughout the state to receive comments on the report. He thought that would leave us open to issues with people that would not say you had enough hearings. So on conference one, we added the word to the extent practicable. And that seemed to be acceptable. And everybody, 2 out of their 3, signed the report. The House, the chamber down the hall there voted down our conference report and said that that was not enough. They wanted something more locally in tune with where he shall hold the public hearings. So we went back to conference 2, and we said the director shall hold public hearings in the county or counties of the proposed facility throughout the state to the extent practicable. And so that's what we came up with. So the actual language reads, the director shall hold public hearings in the county or counties where the proposed storage facility will be located and throughout the state to the extent practicable. And they signed the report, so I would ask for your aye vote on this, and hopefully this is good for them too. Thank you.
Further discussion. The motion is to accept Joint Conference Committee Report Number 2, Reference House Message Number 346 to Senate File Number 6. You've been asked to vote aye. If you vote aye, you vote to adopt Joint Conference Committee Report Number 2. Will the Chief Clerk please call the roll?
Agar?
Aye.
Aye. Anderson?
Aye.
Aye. Anselmi Dalton?
Aye.
Aye. Baldwin?
Aye.
Aye. Barnard?
Aye.
Boner?
Aye.
Aye. Bouchard?
Aye.
Aye. Burns?
Aye.
Aye. Case?
Aye.
Aye. Christensen?
Aye.
Aye. Coe?
Aye.
Dockstetter?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Aye. Ellis?
Aye.
Aye. Emmerich? Aye. Hastert?
Aye.
Aye. Hicks?
Aye.
Aye. Kinski?
Aye.
Aye. Landon?
Aye.
Aye. Meyer?
Aye.
Aye. Moniz?
Aye.
Aye. Nethercott? Aye. Pappas?
Excused.
Perkins?
Aye.
Aye. Peterson?
Excused.
Excused. Rothfuss?
Aye.
Aye. Scott?
Aye.
Aye. Von Fladern?
Aye.
Aye. Wasserberger?
Aye.
Aye. President Bebap?
Aye.
Aye. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 28 aye, 2 excused.
By your vote, you have adopted Joint Conference Committee Report Number 2, Reference House Message Number 346 to Senate File 6. Report that business of signing of enrolled acts. Senate Enrolled Act Number 36.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 36, being Original Senate File 15, an act relating to special districts.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act Number 36, being Original Senate File Number 15. I so signed. Senate Enrolled Act Number 37.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 37, being Original Senate File 126, an act relating to guides and outfitters.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act Number 37, being Original Senate File Number 126. I so signed. Senate Enrolled Act Number 38.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 38, being Original Senate File 133, an act relating to crimes and offenses.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act Number 38, being Original Senate File Number 133. I so signed. Senate Enrolled Act Number 39.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 39, being Original Senate File 154, an act relating to sex offender registration.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act Number 39, being Original Senate File Number 154. So signed. House Enrolled Act Number 38.
House Enrolled Act Number 38, being Original House Bill 291, an act relating to Department of Health facilities.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act Number 38, being Original House Bill Number 291. I so signed. House Enrolled Act Number 39.
House Enrolled Act Number 39, being Original House Bill 82, an act relating to sales and use tax.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act Number 39, being Original House Bill Number 82. I so signed. House Enrolled Act Number 40.
House Enrolled Act Number 40, being Original House Bill 38, an act relating to school finance.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act Number 40, being Original House Bill Number 38. I so sign House Enrolled Act Number 41.
House Enrolled Act Number 41, being Original House Bill 19, an act relating to sales tax.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act Number 41, being Original House Bill Number 19. I so sign House Enrolled Act Number 42.
House Enrolled Act Number 42, being Original House Bill 86, an act relating to water development projects.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act Number 42, being Original House Bill Number 86. I so sign House Enrolled Act Number 43.
House Enrolled Act Number 43, being Original House Bill 128, an act relating to motor vehicle registration.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act Number 43, being Original House Bill Number 128. House Bill 128. I so sign House Enrolled Act Number 44.
House enrolled Act Number 44 being original House Bill 163, an act relating to elections.
I'm about to sign House enrolled Act Number 44 being original House Bill 163. I've so signed. House Enrolled Act Number 45.
House Enrolled Act Number 45 being original House Bill 74, an act relating to state-recognized commemorative days.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act Number 45 being original House Bill 74. I so sign House Enrolled Act Number 46.
House Enrolled Act Number 46 being original House Bill 183, an act relating to public funds.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act Number 46 being original House Bill Number 183. I so sign House Enrolled Act Number 47.
House Enrolled Act Number 47 being original House Bill 44, an act relating to professional engineers and land surveyors.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act Number 47 being original House Bill Number 44. I so sign House Enrolled Act Number 48.
House Enrolled Act Number 48 being original House Bill 23, an act relating to the Secretary of State.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act Number 48 being original House Bill Number 23. I have so signed House Enrolled Act Number 49.
House Enrolled Act Number 49 being original House Bill 221, an act relating to labor and employment.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act Number 49 being original House Bill Number 221. I have so signed House Enrolled Act Number 50.
House Enrolled Act Number 50 being original House Bill 254, an act relating to state investments.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act Number 50 being original House Bill Number 254. I have so signed House Enrolled Act Number 51.
House Enrolled Act Number 51 being original House Bill 26, an act relating to state lands.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act Number 51 being original House Bill Number 26. I have so signed House Enrolled Act Number 52.
House Enrolled Act Number 52 being original House Bill 111, an act relating to workers' compensation.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act Number 52 being original House Bill Number 111. I so sign and House Enrolled Act Number 53.
House Enrolled Act Number 53 being original House Bill 164, an act relating to professions and occupations.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act Number 53 being original House Bill Number 164. I have so signed. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, I believe that clears the desk.
It's about time, Mr. President. Thank you. Mr. President, I move that the Senate stand adjourned until 9:30 a.m., Friday, February 24th.
Announcements. Senator Coe.
Mr. President, your committee number four, Education, to meet tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock for a quick meeting to take up House Bill 126, Elementary School Foreign Language Requirement.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet with our counterparts from the House tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. in Jonah Room L54. Committee members note L54. And purposes discussed, joint interim topics.
Senator Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Judiciary Committee number 1 will meet tomorrow morning, Friday the 24th, 8 a.m., Jonah S18, to consider the following bills. House Bill 238, nude image of a minor disseminated or possessed by a minor. House Bill 97, uniform trust transfers. House Bill 97, Wyoming Uniform Transfers to Minors Act Amendments. House Bill 75, engrossed, automatic restoration of the right to vote.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, Committee Number 8, Transportation, will meet tomorrow at 9 a.m. in Jonah Room S-27 to consider the following bill. House Bill 230, engrossed, hemp farming.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, your Committee Number 2, Appropriations, will meet at, let's say, 5 after 6 down in the Appropriations Room, where we hopefully will finish up negotiations with the committee from the other end of the building on the budget bill. In addition, we will meet at 9 a.m. tomorrow morning for, I guess, a quick meeting to discuss interim topics.
Excuse me. Any other message? Any other announcements? You all heard the motion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carried. The Senate stands adjourned until 9:30 a.m. tomorrow, Friday, February 24th.